It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. How many other progressive radio programs are live today, but this one is. Hi, this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. It is, in fact, the fifth day of July 2021. And, you know, I'm Robin. And if you would like to augment your federal holiday listening pleasure, run on over to HeadOn.live. Click on chat room. If you've never been there before, pick out a screen name and a password. And jump right in. The conversation is fine. You'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Otto Deschott, Roger in Oregon, and Squeaky. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, since it's north of 100 degrees, he has decided not to fold space, even though he's a third stage guild navigator, into Man Cave. And wise he is in doing it. Yep. Here we are. The end of the 4th of July holiday weekend. I'm glad I am of it. Yeah, I am. It means a respite from the explosions, and the puppy and the kitties aren't quite so horrified anymore. It was like a war zone around here. Oh, Jesus. But it was a lovely 4th of July holiday weekend. Did some ribs. They were tasty. And actually went out last night and did some karaoke. Because, you know, just to get out of the house a little bit. And it was fun. And, you know, it's possible to hang out in a little establishment and do nothing but drink club soda all night. And it was just a boatload of fun. I think this particular holiday weekend, much as was the case with Memorial Day, saw people really, really wanting to be out and celebrating, and they did. And I was among a bunch of people who were vaccinated, so didn't feel bad about that. It was just a pleasant weekend. But, you know, Monday rolled around, and I was eager to get back on the air. Yeah. Because I hate missing. Which brings me to a program note, a reminder. I have an appointment on Wednesday afternoon at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And that means that the odds of me being on air on time are very slim and may possibly be no program at all, depending on what kind of time is involved. So, there's that. Just, you know, make a note of it. And please accept my apologies on the front end. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so I have thanks to send out today. Thanks very kindly to our third, fourth, and fifth day of the month subscribers over at PayPal. It's profoundly helpful. So that means thank you to Stephen. Thank you, Stephen, so much. Thank you to Gene and Ann across the pond. Thank you to John. Thank you to William, Bill, Thank you to Mick. Thanks so much. Thanks as well to Thomas on the 4th and David. Thank you to Paul on the 4th. Thank you so very much indeed. Thanks to Bernice. Thank you, Bernice, today. Thank you, Roberto. Thank you to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you, James in Illinois. Thank you, Kevin in Colorado Springs. Thank you also very much. And that means our fundraising goal, well, it was at 422. But that, but thanks to Cynthia out in the Bay Area, thank you, Cynthia, so very kindly. We're down now to 398. Thank you. Thank you so much. 398, and we'll be caught up. That's what the fundraising goal is. There's 98 bucks left of yesterday, or of Friday, and 300. So, you know, maybe we'll, it'd be great if we could knock that out. And just make, you know, every time we do that, it just makes things a little more stress-free. And if you want to help, remember the PayPal interface is right there on the main page at headon.live. If you'd like to become a brand new Patreon subscriber, well, by Jove, that is under the contribute tab. Okay? So that's where we stand. But it is More Ann Monday. We have More Anns. No surprise, really. No surprise at all. But we have More Anns to get into. And yeah, this program is live. But I had I had a couple of things just along the way to make mention of that. You know, there's neither here nor there. Oh, another program note. You get 4 hours of Robin today, because you get, well, no. Bottom line is, Mike Malloy extended the holiday weekend and asked me if I would mind sitting in this evening, and I'm happy to do it, of course. Always happy to do that. And I thought it would be fun to involve, because so many people enjoyed it so very much last week when I did this. She was short for time last week, but this time it'll be Tara Devlin and me for the whole evening. And I think that'll be a blast. It'll probably fly by in no time flat. What else? Here in about an hour, a little less than an hour, because we haven't talked with him in a long time, and I have a story that is particularly relevant to him. Our buddy Dan Fisher will be popping by, and we'll talk a little bit about what he's doing these days and what he has been doing entertainment world-wise. And we'll also talk about the question of vaccines, vaccinations, and what that means to someone who is permanently immunocompromised, like Dan is, because, of course, Dan is a heart transplant survivor. So I'm looking forward to that, because my conversations with Dan, much like my conversations with Tara, are always wonderful. So, you know, that. Let's see. I've screwed up. I had said there was going to be a Monday on the front porch, but I've got, I also scheduled Dan as well, so that's on me, so my apologies. I had a couple of different things on my mind, and among other things, it's it's a toasty 89 degrees here in the studio. A little naked radio-y, frankly. But we'll see where it all takes us. Oh, darn it! What was it that was on my mind? I was too much. I hate it when they. This is one of them because. Because More Anns. This is a for-profit media More Ann nomination. Mm-hmm. Do the news outlets have to put this stuff forward right at the holidays? I mean, whether it be Christmas or Independence Day, what have you. There I was, minding my own business, as is always almost the case. And I see a notification, CNN Health, too much southern food can cause a sudden heart attack, but Mediterranean diet reduced risk. Really? On the weekend when people are, the country over, people are eating hot dogs and hamburgers and corn on the cob with a lot of butter. But yeah, by all means, CNN Health, thanks for everything. Scare the daylights out of me and get me depressed right in the middle of reaching for that second slab of ribs. You're right. Yeah. So we'll see. I tell you what, I think it might be fun. I'll bring Dan on, and depending on how his bandwidth works, we'll chat for a while and then see if, and I don't really know how to do this, see if I can bring in the Front Porch Gang to see if anybody wants to talk to Dan, get questions, because we've never really done a lot of that. I think that could be really, really fun. But yeah, thanks, CNN. Thanks for freaking nothing. You don't have to be Southern to love fried chicken, buttered biscuits, sausage, gravy, sweet tea, or any of the other. Really, the sweet tea is part of the heart attack, too? Really? Or other fried and fat or sugar-laden foods typical of this American region. I had no idea that fried chicken was an exclusively Southern Confederate thing. Right. Brother Deacon Asa says, I call bullshit on CNN. There's no way something as delicious as shrimp and grits could possibly be bad for you. So they reference a study published this past week in the Journal of the American Heart Association. And they examined the Southern diet versus the Mediterranean diet. Lots of greens, lots of fish. I love the Mediterranean diet. But one of the upshots out of this damn story, and it's just bad journalism, and we talk about bad journalism on Moran Monday. It is good insofar as once you get down past the clickbait headline, you get to an assertion that, lo and behold, no, this isn't just about, it's not just about diet, but it's about patterns and availability. That typically, economically distressed areas have more garbage food. More fast food. And the proliferation of fast food joints, which rely on a whole bunch of processed crap, probably contributes to all of that. The food deserts, the lack of actual decent grocery stores with real live produce and fresh things to cook. But instead, you know, we get a simplistic, you're going to have a stroke if you eat another fried chicken drumstick. Fuck you, CNN. Really? No, seriously. Oh, well. As well, I had a note from Ron in Raleigh. Ron did something similar to what I did. I did what I suggested. I went back and quietly sat down and read all of Frederick Douglass's, What is the 4th of July to a Slave address from 1852. It's a real eye-opener, and it's brutally convincing. I'm at a loss, Ron and Raleigh says. This past 4th of July weekend, I spent a lot of time watching videos on YouTube and reading a lot of articles on, you guessed it, critical race theory. Actually, I was reading and viewing articles of what a bunch of white people think CRT is. Last month, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system in North Carolina, of course, had a Zoom discussion with Ibrahim X. Kendi, educator and author. Mr. Kendi's field is anti-racism education, But that didn't stop Senator Phil Berger and batshit crazy Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, warning Mark Robinson, aliens approaching, from jumping up and down hooting about how CRT was a discriminatory ideology. Mr. Kendi has on multiple occasions tried to explain that he is a historian, not a lawyer, and that critical race theory is the province of law school, and only then as an elective. Yet all over the web, white people are calling Mr. Kendi a critical race theorist. It has dawned on me, Ron says, that the Republican Party, with its finger on the pulse of a plurality of white people, the intention of this program of lies is to scare the crap out of white people, and anything about race does just that. At its core, this whole program is about flipping the script and making white people the victims of racism. Listening to Frederick Douglass's 4th of July speech, I tried to figure out how, under current circumstances, you could read and discuss this piece of oration in a public school. Something's got to give. We need a new, at long last, sir, have you no dignity moment. I don't see it happening. I don't either. But maybe it's a little bit more direct than that. Maybe it's a matter of finding school systems and teachers willing to teach that speech. And then let them try to attack that. What are you talking about? Donald Trump himself, the former guy, said that more and more people were finding out about Frederick Douglass. Well, we're just trying to help what he suggested along. Sure. And as I've been saying all along, how about we just teach real history? How about we teach history and call it history? But delicate, dainty, fragile, white fifis, right? Yeah. Stockton Larry, it did. It harshed my holiday buzz. And thanks very kindly to Stockton Larry as well. We are actually only $47. I just realized that, $47. Because Stockton Larry took care of have a show on me. So that's wonderful. Thank you very kindly. I can't overestimate how important those moments are. But, again, 4th of July holiday. We can't enjoy the food because, you know, CNN will wag its finger at us and say bad. I saw that. Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that, Nidia. Watch that chicken. A couple of days ago, I cheated from my mostly plant-based diet and got violently ill. There's a huge recall on chicken due to listeria. I saw that. And just Tyson. It's Tyson chicken. Look it up. They've recalled a ton of their chicken products because, well, the Tyson Corporation somehow or another can't manage to keep listeria out of its production process. Imagine that. You know, I'm so old I can remember when we used to have this this thing called the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And they employed these people who were called inspectors, and the inspectors went into meat packing plants, and they looked around and made sure that everything was clean. But Republicanism caught on somewhere along the way, and as a consequence, we found out that the private sector meat packing plants, well, the private sector can inspect for meat safety a heck of a lot better than any old, those job-killing regulators of the federal government. Mm-hmm. And so somewhere along the way, beef gets contaminated, chicken gets contaminated, pork gets contaminated. Because I guess it's just not that easy to, you know, for corporate America to keep their plants clean, their slaughterhouses, because it interferes with corporate profits. It's kind of the meat equivalent of back when Don Blankenship here in West Virginia, when he was running Massey Energy, said,
if you ain't mining coal, you ain't working. We don't make no money on safety measures. And that Don Blankenship. Sure. Well, it's the same thing. Corporate meat industry. But for also because Moran Monday, holy smoke. I saw this on social media over the weekend. And I double-checked. Our good friend John in Central PA sent this to me. And not doubting John or anything, but I did. I double-checked to make sure it was real. And son of a gun, it backtracked to the Instagram account, the verified blue checkmark Instagram account of Mark Zuckerdweeb. What it was, and you know what these wakeboard things are? They're like water skis, but they stand up above the water and kind of bounce. And it was a video of Mark Zuckerdweeb riding along on a wakeboard whilst carrying or holding up an American flag that was flapping in the breeze. That was bad enough. I mean, I don't like to spend any portion of my precious finite life energy just gratuitously despising people. But Mark Zuckerberg makes it so easy. Because he's so awful. And then I turned up the sound. Oh, God. Why? Why? But as a soundtrack to it, they had they'd mixed in John Denver singing Take Me Home Country Roads. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that video of Mark Zuckerdweeb on the wakeboard wasn't shot in West Virginia any more than the vast majority of that wonderful song is about anywhere that's in West Virginia. But it really did make me regret the absence of apex predator water species aquatic life in West Virginia. I mean, climate change will eventually bring alligators to West Virginia. May take a little bit more time, probably not that much, till it's warm enough here year-round for the gators to survive, but... I can't... The level of disgust I had with that... Well, man. Liberal talker says he hates flag videos. No, I don't hate flag videos. I hate gratuitous bullshit performative displays of fake patriotism. Ugh. Ugh. I mean, why couldn't he have had the common decency just to use Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA so that we could all just go, oh, well, that's Lee Greenwood. Yeah, fuck that. That miserably awful ditty. Mm-hmm. God. As Terris points out, who needs job-killing regulations? Then your condo building collapses, but you don't know because you're dead. Yeah, yeah. That, again, that's geology, geography, hydrology, and capitalism laying in a rubbled heap on the ground in Florida. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about the double booking, Lee in New York says, I thought your only mistakes were in ciphering. Well, there's mistakes involved in booking, too. So, there was a Trump rally this weekend, Steve in New York pointed out. Of course, the Morans are aplenty. On and on and on. Yeah. Morans, Morans everywhere, nor anyone to think. We President Biden gave an Independence Day address yesterday. Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, of course, refused to air it. And he was, it was a good speech. And part of it plays, one of the things that he said plays into what I wanted to talk to Dan about this evening. Because it was a political speech, but it was a patriotic speech, whatever that word means now. For a certain portion of the public, the maggots, it means whatever garbage comes burbling out of the mouth of Foolius Geezer. But it also refers to a love of country, and not just a love of country, but to a love of one's fellow citizens, a respect for one's fellow citizens, a sense of solicitude for one's fellow citizens. And so he gave thanks to the nation's military. He gave thanks to people, to emergency responders. He gave thanks to everybody who's helped this country get through a terrifying pandemic that isn't over yet. Yeah. And along the way, he said, make no mistake, taking your vaccine, getting the vaccine, is one of the most patriotic things you can do right now in this country. But Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, spent a lot of time spreading disinformation and misinformation about the pandemic, and in particular about the vaccine. So they couldn't carry the speech. Because that would get the maggots all upset, and they might change the channel over to Newsmax or that network that spills its news upon the ground, Onan, or Light Fart TV and whatnot. Sure. But we had another car driving into a crowd incident. On the 4th yesterday, NBC4, Washington, D.C. Headline, man who drove into crowd at Washington Monument charged. He's been charged with causing the mayhem that led to the crash. People were sitting along a wall near the Washington Monument, and the driver gunned it. Let's not say gunned it in Gunned Up America. He accelerated rapidly, like he was trying to hit him. And he was driving erratically. He was doing figure eights. And when he got out of his SUV, he looked, filled with consternation. When the driver was pulled from the vehicle after he crashed it, he said, what's wrong with you? He said, I'm dying. And then he said, oh dear, the government is trying to kill me. The government is trying to kill me. Now, if he'd done that during the reign of error of the maladministration of Nitwit Nero, might have had a leg to stand on, because, well, the government under COVID Caligula did try to kill people, and they succeeded in knocking out maybe a half a million Americans with the pandemic that was absolutely avoidable? Sure. Yeah. But damn. Now, the only people who say the government's trying to kill me are the people who grunt and bark and hoot and carry on about Bill Gates is going to put a liquid 5G barcode in my bloodstream so he can follow me where I want to go. The individual has been charged with attempted assault with a dangerous weapon, namely a big, heavy SUV. Oh, this country. And, since Ron and Raleigh mentioned that right-wing craziness and a batshit crazy lieutenant governor. Well, they're in Tarboro, North Carolina. One of their police officers is on a paid vacation after he shot at a car that was driving away from a stop. According to one of the local news outlets down there, Fox 8, they said, Tarboro police said in a news release that the motorist drove off on Sunday after the officer smelled alcohol and marijuana in the car. So there was a car chase, and the car hit another car. Then dude got out and took to Shanks Mares. They caught up with him and plugged dude. Right. We smelled a distinct odor of marijuana in the car. Officer, was there a pizza box in the car? Could that have been oregano? I'm making that part up. But the thing is, the guy got plugged, shot, and when they asked the cop why he shot him, his answer was that most enigmatic of firearm discharge answers, but also one of the most common here in the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now today in the universe forever under God. Why'd you shoot him?
Well, the gun just went off.
The gun just went off. Had a lot of those stories along the way. We have. And almost always, the gun doesn't just go off because guns don't just go off. It's called negligence. If you really didn't mean to shoot the guy, it's negligence. And once you've got him on the ground, there's no time to shoot him. So the state has thrown the book at the driver. And now, like I said, the cop is on a paid vacation while they figure out how his gun just went off. Yeah, you're right. Darlene in Connecticut says, I don't think it was somewhere along the way. It was from the time of the W. Bush administration that our food poisoning problems began, if I recall. His administration significantly weakened the FDA and stopped enforcing regulations with plant inspections, didn't it? Yes. And it seems that Democrats in office since then, even when they've held the presidency in Congress, have done little to correct this. That's true, too. That's why the somewhere along the way part, Darlene. Because some of these mistakes were either originated or perpetuated by Democratic administrations who, I guess, were afraid to piss off the deep pockets of the slaughtering industry. Ugh. They really are. They're trying to turn me into a vegetarian. I resemble that remark. Need to get on that Mediterranean diet anyway, right? I mean, honestly, who doesn't love braised dandelion greens with lime juice and salt? You know, braise them in a little hot olive oil and yummy. Of course they're yummy. Need to eat more of that. More veggies. More fish. Mm-hmm. But at one point in time, the voluntary inspection program was tried. And I'm trying to think if it was under Clinton. And failed. And proved to result in contaminated food. I remember this story from years and years ago. But then it was continued on, which is probably bad grammar or bad syntax. It was continued under the Obama administration. I know. Insufficient ideological purity. Oh, it gets us every time. But there we are. There were waypoints along the way. Let's put it that way, Darlene. Lee points out in New York. Lee in New York points out, "Take me home, country roads. It was an obvious choice. It's probably more popular on Facebook. As you surfboard on a lake, what is more appropriate than take me home, country road?" Yeah, take me home, country puddle. Take me home, country river. Country creek. Country stream. Country wakeboard. Well, this was a programming problem. The Zuckerbot was attempting to appear human, and the parameters of its algorithms, you know, failed again. You'll have that. Oh, and Lee in New York says, as to sweet tea, you didn't really think that adding sugar to tea made it healthy food, did you? Well, no, but it's also not fatty. And the report mentioned a lot about, you know, fatty foods. Gravy on biscuits on gravy. That kind of thing. So we've got that. I think Lamar the Magnificent has something he wants to add to the conversation. Let's check in on over the stress line and see if that's who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's me. You got me down pat. You know what I'm going to call in.
Yeah, only because you told me.
Yeah, I love you like a brother or a sister, whatever you are today. You are still a human being.
I'm the same thing each and every day. I've transitioned. I'm not a brother. I'm a sister.
Oh, whatever.
No, not whatever. Not whatever. No, not whatever.
Okay,
I mean, it matters.
You're my friend.
You are my friend. Absolutely.
You're my friend. So I will kick somebody in the juju to protect you, or I'll even take them out.
Okay.
If I
appreciate that.
Lord, hope we don't go that far.
Let me just take a minute. I had to explain to somebody yesterday, Lamar, that I'm not a that. I'm not a that. I'm not an it. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand your point. You have to remember my generation where I grew up. I was born in 58. And I remember when I did my first job application. It was black, white, and other. I've watched it go to a whole lot of new shit that is on application for employment. And as far as I'm concerned, I call myself a Christian. And everybody is a child of God. What these people get up and they talk about all the time is, oh, we hate this, and I say, well, excuse me, Mr. So-and-so. Each one of these people who you choose to hate has one thing in common with you. They both got a mother and a father. You can't get around that. You cannot get around that. Every lesbian, every transvestite, every individual.
Hold on. Not transvestite either. Transgender is a thing.
I don't want to get into the technicality.
But I have to, Lamar. I have to. I've got to get this stuff squared up.
Okay. I'm talking on a simple layman's term.
So am I.
Every human being has a mother and a father. You can't get around that.
Every human being has parents. Yes.
Yes. So, if you want to hate somebody who is other than heterosexual like you, you're hating somebody's child in the story.
Yeah. That's true. That much is true.
So I'm like this. I have so much in my background that it's not even funny. I don't even look. I stopped dealing with soap operas because I live a soap opera. I have children from lesbians. I have heterosexual children. It doesn't matter. They're my child in the story. I will kick you in the nuts and beat you over the head because they are my child. And I will protect my child. And when I become to, when a parent gets to the point where they will not defend their child, they are not a parent. They are a parasite. That's where I stand. I didn't, you flipped what I was calling in about early. You flipped me. But you know what? I'm going to get back to what I was calling in about.
That's fine.
The problem that we have is Reaganomics and Reagan, period. You're talking about the USDA and the food inspection. Reagan changed all that shit. He allowed these clowns to poison us with the food. I understand why people are scared of vaccination. Well, you know what? I would be scared of vaccinations too if I knew that my government is now allowing mercury and lead to be injected or part of any vaccination. I understand their problem because that causes birth defects as well as mental retardation. End of story. America got rid of lead and mercury in products in the 60s. And for Reagan to allow that shit to come back in the 80s was an abomination. Everything everybody has a problem with today goes back to 1980 or 1979. When Reagan came in.
Yeah, we've been saying that for a long time on this program.
But see, saying it and not really pointing out the factual situation is two things.
Yeah, we did that too.
Hillary Clinton lost me when she made the statement, we can no longer have free colleges. Excuse me, Heffa, you're older than me. I lost my ability to go to a free college back in 74 when Reagan became governor of California. He killed that shit, which started, if everybody do some research, Reagan started a whole lot of shit that we are dying from now. You were talking earlier about the Food Administration. Well, you know what? I'm like this. God said in his Proverbs, that anything, overindulgence in anything on this planet will kill you. Wine, water, food, whatever, will kill your ass, which is true. Real simple. When you come up and tell me you shouldn't eat macaroni and cheese, okay, fine. I won't eat macaroni and cheese every goddamn day because, yes, it will kill me. But if I have the acknowledgement of that and the knowledge of knowing what I should not eat too much of, which is everything, is a thing. They tell you don't drink more than 8 cups of coffee. Then they turn around and tell you drink 12 cups of coffee. It helps your thing. That's confusing.
And 9 times out of 10, when you see something like that, it's being put out that way because of bad journalism. Journalism handles a lot of things. Some journalism handles a lot of things fairly well. Things like food safety, human health. No, That is probably one area where you can look more than any other and find examples of bad writing leading to bad headlines. And we live in a time Lamar, when the content doesn't matter, the clicks and the eyeballs on the screen matter. Your 4th of July picnic's going to give you a stroke. I mean, it was good enough to get me to read it, but I read it with a jaundiced eye going, in other words, I read that story because I knew that it would be bullshit.
Well, but see, not everybody is. It's like, okay, remember the Rockefellers back in the 60s? When he got up, you may not remember it because it is a little earlier than you were born. Rockefeller said, and he got up on the floor and made a profound statement. We are educating our populace too well. And since he made that statement, America has made it a number two objective to keep America people dumbified. You take all these people who are screaming hard about critical race theory. Okay, fine. You don't want to teach critical race theory. Fine, I agree with you. I don't want to talk about critical race theory, but my version of critical race theory is a little higher than what you are talking about. You don't want critical race theory about how whites have treated people on this continent and treated people, period. So to solve critical race theory, don't teach no history whatsoever. Because if you're going to talk about how the Pilgrims landed in Plymouth Rock and the Indians shared their knowledge for their survival as critical race theory, fine. You don't want to talk about how black people were brought here against their will and used as free labor to promote and benefit you, white people. Not all white. See, what a lot of people keep making the mistake, white people keep making the mistake, as well as some blacks. America is based on what we call a class theory. If you're not in a particular group of financial stability, you're going to get screwed. This is why Biden said, I'm not taxing nobody who makes over $400,000 a year. Bullshit. I argue against that. But you know what? That's the first step of fixing this bullshit. So I don't get up there and wail against him because he is talking the truth, but he's at a level that a lot of people don't have. If he's going to fix income equality, undo Reagan's bullshit about you got to go to 65 to be eligible for something. See, America, back in the 50s when I first started working, I started working in the early, before 80. And it was like this. Retirement age was 55 years of age. And no reason why it was 55 years of age, because most of the labor laws, most of the labor jobs we have, if you're over 55, you cannot do that job. There ain't no way in the world a person who is doing cement and construction can be lugging a 90-pound bag of concrete anywhere. That's too much weight on an old body. Simple. It's really simple. And then they get to talking about a whole lot of other shit. And then when Bush, the senior, came in and he started fixing a whole lot of other shit, the Republicans have put America in the position that we're in today.
Well, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute, Lamar. I've got the chart right here in front of me. The Social Security retirement age has never been 55, ever. From 1937,
really?
From 1937 it was 65. In 1955 it was for full benefits. In 1955 it was 66 years and 2 months. And for anybody born after 1960, it is 67 years of age for full benefits. Now before that you could retire at 62 and take reduced benefits, but it's never been 55, ever.
Well, let me put it like this. I was in the workforce during that time. I worked for a government. I worked for the city of Los Angeles. And they were pushing us to retire at 55 with full benefits. Like you say, state rights have a whole lot of say-so in it. And I agree with the Republicans on one thing. Minimum wage should be based on the economy of your state. I give them that argument. I agree with them on that 110%, because nobody in Texas, Arkansas, or Oklahoma should be getting the benefits of somebody who lives in Los Angeles, San Francisco, or New York, Philadelphia, or Chicago, because the cost of living should dictate what you should have your cost of living at. I'm going to tell you, I'm talking from experience, brother. Talking from experience, sister. I'm talking from experience. When my father, who we always took a vacation in East Texas, all I had to do, I'm talking from 77 through 89. When we used to go down there regularly before he passed away. He passed away in the late 90s due to complications. But I could take $1,000 and go to Kilgore, Texas, Otterbell, and Longview, and all those places along that region. And I could just survive for a whole month without even putting a dent in my and what I brought.
Sure.
I just went.
Yeah, we talked about this very thing last week. Absolutely, we did. You and I.
Well, I might have missed that show.
No, Lamar, you were the one who was talking about how much you could take to Texas, and yeah, that was
that's your call. The point. When I left, I mean, when I went to go visit my daughter, who is married to an Air Force person. See, the 4th of July and every military day affects me a lot different than a lot of other people, because I have military family. I am from a military family. I'm like, I really had to think real hard which confrontation in America that my relatives were not involved in. And I can't come up with one. I have relatives who fought in World War I. I have brothers who fought in Civil War.
Same.
I have people who are serving as of today. My wife's nephew, which is my nephew through the family, who are still serving right now. So, you know, I understand what the military is going through. It hurts me. But you know what? It's like this. We are Americans. When you start saying certain groups are not American, you have already lost the argument. This is a country of immigrants. We are the ultimate experiment. Anybody can come to this land and become a citizen. Name another country that you can do that.
New Zealand, Australia, Canada. You can go there and become a citizen, too.
Yeah, but see, my point, what I'm trying to expound on is America is the ultimate experiment. We, like it says on the statute, like I say, these people who are talking right now about white people making this a white country, well, you know what? First thing you need to do, if you want to make this a white country, first thing you need to do is blow up statues. While we trying to, let me catch.
Hey, Lamar, I've got a conversation slated for just a couple of minutes from now, so we will carry it on at a later date, and I have no doubt of that. So let's wrap it up for this evening, and try again another day, okay? Because I got to bring Dan on in just a minute.
That's why I was hoping you wouldn't pick me up until after Dan.
Well, but Dan's going to
Dan.
Dan's going to be on for most of the program, so we'll try. We will try on another day. All right. You take care, Lamar.
No problem.
Hi.
No problem. No problem.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
And Lamar the Magnificent getting us off to a rousing start. But, you know, he makes salient points. The failure, you know, we decry the failure of civic education in this country. And it begins with Ronald Reagan. When I graduated high school in 1981, everybody still had to take ninth grade civics. It didn't last much longer. And the next thing you know, it was passé. Sorry, Lamar, says Greg, but I don't agree with you about state-set minimum wages. As a union member, we all made the same hourly wage, whether or not I was working in North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, South Dakota, or in Iowa, too, where they have idiots out wandering around. No reason to discriminate or regulate that way, in my opinion. Well, I think... there's minimum wage, but then there's prevailing wage, and any union member knows damned well what prevailing wage is. And that is for things like government expenditure-based projects, the idea that we're going to pay the prevailing wage for that kind of work. And in many states, for many years, that was whatever union scale was that was the prevailing wage. Because things like Davis-Bacon in federal programs requires the payment of prevailing wage. In fact, I'm so old I can remember when Dim Leader wanted to eliminate Davis-Bacon provisions from recovery from Hurricane Katrina. And that was infuriating. Let me go back for a minute to something I said just off the cuff. I said because ideological purity, talking about Barack Obama. I always say that. Because over on our side, I mean, you know, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpansies, maggots, you know, what have you. You know, they complain, but they know damn good and well that when they have political power, they're going to use it. We, on the other hand, and this is akin to what I was talking about, there being no real left last week. Our side plays to the center assiduously. The most wild-eyed liberal thing we've got going on right now is the enhanced child tax credit that is going out to support people with children right now. And God, to hear a right-winger talk about it, you'd think that three-year-old children were marching through the streets carrying the hammer and sickle banner and singing the Internationale. Darlene asked, maybe I misunderstood. Did you say that criticizing Obama continuing Clinton's BS food industry's voluntary self-inspection is somehow being ideologically impure? We're talking about health and safety. There's no excuse for what either of those men did in that regard. I don't think it rises to the level of ideological impurity or any ideology. It's about health and safety. It's like the maggots equating wearing a mask with their freedoms being imposed upon. We freaking pay for the food we buy. We should expect it safe and healthful. This is why both those men were fantastic moderate Republican presidents that I had to vote for, because the alternatives were just piss-poor alternatives. Our binary system. I know, Darlene. And you know, the problem is that, like I said, we tend to run to the center. And a disease infected the Democratic Party. I mean, I'm a Democrat to this day. I've never been anything but a Democrat. But a disease infected our party back after McGovern got pasted in 1972 with a world of Republican dirty tricks going on around him. But he got pasted, and some Democrats looked up and said, you know, we got to get some of that sweet corporate money. And so that's how all of a sudden you get to, and you know, Bill Clinton standing there and wagging his knuckle at the world saying, the era of big government is finally over. Well, maybe we're lucky enough to be on the cusp of some of big government coming back. Because we need a government big enough to keep food industries from poisoning people. But we're not there yet. And right now, I think we're trapped in an era of, well, you know, you're just going to have, you know, your food's just going to come in contact with poop sometimes, and you need to deal with it. But even proper cooking, because if you, you know, cross-contamination, you handle the raw chicken, and maybe you reach to, and, you know, you rub your eye or something, and you're in. There are multiple vectors of transmission is what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, that's part of it. And there's a bunch of stuff to go into this evening. But okay. Let's see. I'm hoping we're right there at the top of the hour. And remember, because I had failed to calculate properly, you know, because I cipher poorly, it's more like $50 we need just to raise to be even with this evening and the week, and that would be tremendously helpful. So we've got that. And I hesitate because I'm waiting on Dan's call, and. I don't want to get into something that's going to take us take a whole bunch of time to sort out. But there's Dan now. I wanted to share a couple of things. Something that both Megan had remarked upon and Kyle in Kentucky Stan did too. I have to be honest, Kyle says, after seeing what went on yesterday in Philly and the rest of the weekend involving maggots, the only emotions I was and am able to feel about this country right now are sickness and shame. It's where we've gotten to. I literally feel ashamed of my country. On the weekend, we're supposed to be celebrating its independence, the election after we defeated a fascist president at the polls. I'm just sad. That's all there is to it. What a nightmare. By the way, and if you haven't seen it, I mean, yeah, masked maggots, white supremacists, neo-Nazis, you know, Patriot Front scum marched, decent-sized group of an indecent group in Philly, and were sent running. I mean, that's the good part. They were sent run. They were sent on the run by people who had the good common American decency to oppose fascists. But they were there. They were absolutely there, and because it was just trolling to get for clickbait. Junior Trader Tot posted some stupid dummied up image over the weekend of his filthy criminal daddy flying on the back of a bald eagle. And of course, all too many people took that bait like kittens lap cream. And the aftermath of that is never pretty. But yeah, but that's what these assholes are going to do. And lo and behold, you know, it's manifested in the fact that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda can't even be bothered to carry a patriotic speech. Jesus, I remember. Yeah, I remember in 2004 when Dim Leader came to Charleston, West Virginia on ostensibly a patriotic 4th of July trip that turned out to be a goddamn campaign rally on the State House grounds in Charleston. People were arrested for taking overshirts off that had shirts under that said, you know, suck it, George, or I hate W, or W sucks. I don't remember what the exact T-shirt was. But they damn sure were. And that was the era of the Bush free speech zones and everything else that went with it. And, okay. Greg says, hey, Robin, try this one in your Clinton voice.
The era of big government is over. But first, big government is going to have a cigar with an intern.
I hope that was up to snuff, Greg. And John in Central PA says, speaking of wages, why the hell does my union counterpart make fully double what I make? A little bit unfair. And, of course, they don't seem to care. Well, the they are, if the they is the Republicans, no, they're downright excited about it. Yeah. That's one of the other victories of the right wing, to get people who aren't in a union to look at people who are and had decent wages and hopefully dignified retirements to go, well, why they got that when I ain't? Instead of, why don't I have the gumption to go and join a union and do something that I can have representation on so I can have a decent living wage too? Because, see, the second part, that confers a certain amount of that stuff that Republicans love to talk about so much, namely personal responsibility. Yeah. But I'm thrilled to pieces that Dan Fisher is here and with us. Good evening, Dan.
Oh, good evening. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
That's the first question.
Yes.
I think just a few minutes earlier, I could hear you just slightly flailing. It was like 6:01, and you're like, and well, I'm pleased to vamp. Or you know, you sounded a little like you were waiting for me to call. And honestly, I just forgot to call because I was listening to the show, and I was
you got all wrapped up. Yeah. Well, now what it was really, Dan, is I've got a story that's, but it's going to take some time, and I didn't want to be a third of the way into that when you called, because it, well, it's an interesting and yet somewhat complicated story, and I didn't want to get lost in that and make that the beginning of our conversation, because it's been a little while, hasn't it?
I don't know. Last time I spoke with you was it Memorial Day, which wasn't that long ago.
That was the end of May. It's been a month.
Okay. Yeah, but no, I'm a working person, and my job happens to be in Brooklyn, which is kind of a hefty commute, especially coming home. It can take me anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours to get home.
Oof.
Right around the time you're doing your thing. So I haven't been able to just, you know, drop by and entertain or inform or partake. I've had to just be a listener on occasion, and other times just another grouchy commuter among many wondering why the hell the traffic isn't moving. But I'm pleased as punch to be here today on the 5th of July, holiday for me, working-wise. And a listener to your show, as always. So I wanted to say one thing before we get on who knows how many tangents. You had the one listener I was listening to, and he had lots of stuff to say. One thing he said that's not true that needs to be reinforced is that there is no mercury in COVID-19 vaccines.
Absolutely. I'm sorry I let that one slide.
That's okay. And I think your listeners are discriminating enough to know when certain things are most likely not true. I don't think anyone's like, I didn't know that. I guess I better not. Your listeners are pretty much a topic game, I'd imagine. I forget, do you have hate listeners? Do you have people that call just to, like, you know, occasionally call in and argue with you?
No, not really.
I mean, you know, I occasionally hate view a little bit of Fox News, but I can never last that long.
Yeah, I don't I don't do that performative thing where I argue just to be arguing. It's always been my goal to have a place that was safe and meaningful to discuss actual real world issues.
Yeah, and that's great because we have enough you know, loudmouths out there as it is who, you know, will take a stand against everything from masks to Obama's brown jacket.
Yes.
We don't need one more of those in this world. And that is a very good Clinton impression.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's not Phil Hartman level, but it's very good for a civilian.
Well, I appreciate that. In other words, Dan, we might say that it is, dare I say, adequate.
It is adequate. It is very close, but no cigar, if you will.
Ah, wait a minute.
No, I'm, I, you know, look, I don't want to go down the Clinton road. We've got too much other stuff.
No, no, that's it, right.
2020.
Well, part of, yeah, part of the reason that
I'm concerned about.
Part of the reason that I reached out to you was because of a story I read out of the Chicago Tribune last week. And it was, God, I don't think anybody in their right mind would file this under human interest.
Well, I'm interested. Go ahead.
But it's you know, Chicago centric, and it starts out with a story of a woman named Barbara Creed, who can't visit her grandchildren in Texas because she is a transplant recipient. And so Texas is, of course, horrifyingly unvaccinated.
Yes, it is.
And so the question becomes one of what it's bad enough for people who are at risk because of more standard comorbidities. But for transplant patients, it's a hell of a lot more than that, isn't it?
It is. And the New York Times actually just came out with a story this morning. So I've been getting a number of people have emailed me today with a link to the same story. And it's something I've been aware of for at least a couple of weeks now. And I'm happy to talk about it a little bit, which is that, you know, this... We're in the summer of quote unquote opening up, and I'm very happy for that. You know that enough people, you know, nationally, we're at that point now where enough people have gotten the vaccine that that we've relaxed the standards. And the thing is, you can't hold on to, you know, never leave your house and wear a mask everywhere and wear gloves. You can't hold on to that forever, especially if there's not a need. And so anyway, but what we have learned for people like myself, I am a transplant recipient, as you know, and as I think most of your listeners know, I received a new heart in the winter or the autumn of 2018. I've had it for years. And with that wonderful gift comes the responsibility of me having to take immunosuppressants for the rest of my life every day. I have my little pill tray, and I take them in a combination of medications four times a day, for which I set my iPod alarm. And it's great. It keeps my heart from being rejected by my body. My antibodies and blood, white blood cells don't think of my heart as a foreign object that must be destroyed and removed. It lets it go, and that's great. Problem is that there has been uncertainty about those who are on immunosuppressants or are naturally have immunosuppression problems of how much good is the vaccine doing or at all, or you know, there was even some concern that it might do harm, but that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems that it is safe for transplant patients and recipients, I should say, to get vaccinated. The stats so far have been in our favor. That's the good news. The not great news is that those of us who do take various meds, and I had my vaccines way back in March. I had Moderna, two shots of Moderna. The rates of antibody formation are not as high as quote unquote normal people. After the first. I have statistics in front of me because I didn't want to come off too fumblingly tonight. After the first mRNA vaccination, both Pfizer and Moderna, the antibody formation rate is about 20%. And after the second dose can be up to 57%. But what they're also finding is that the medications that one takes to prevent rejection can also basically nullify the effects of the vaccine, because it becomes something of a war of and by necessity my meds have to win in order for me to be alive. I don't want to die of COVID, but I have to also keep taking these things every day to not die of the other stuff. So it's a conundrum. And now there are questions about would a third shot improve things? Even a fourth shot, should we double it up? And the thing is, the real answer to that is we don't really know yet. There is no unified national study going on about the effects of the vaccine on immunosuppressed individuals. And the research being done is done, you know, being done hospital by hospital in terms of the issues of will a third vaccine work. But so far, results have been pretty good. In the New York Times article, there was this citation of a study in France where I think they gave additional, they studied 60 people who took the third dose, and their antibody levels did go up to fight the COVID virus, and without any seeming ill effects on their bodies in terms of their body still being able to fight rejection. So that's good, but there's still so much we don't know. It would be very tempting just to say, hey, just keep hitting me up with that vaccine. Just give me three, four. Give me a gallon jug of the stuff, and I'll gulp it down like Kool-Aid. But
give me a 12 pack.
Yeah, I'll wash it down with some Clorox while I'm at it. But we're not there yet. We don't know, and so the even antibody testing at this time, there's still limited role of what antibody testing can tell us. That said, I have an appointment on the 19th coming up with one of my regular visits I would be doing anyway. And I've had enough months between taking the vaccine and this appointment that we're gonna do an antibody test, and we're gonna see how my body's responding to it. But until then, I have to pretend that I didn't have a vaccination of any kind, and that things are as bad as they ever were. I have to be still that careful. And this was a problem this weekend. I went away, Helene and I went up to the Catskills. And this was our first sort of trip by ourselves away from the house. And, you know, we knew that there'd be limitations. We expected that, well, first of all, the weather was shitty. That nobody can blame. You can't even blame, you know, Republicans for that one. But, well, maybe you can. But the weather.
Well, I mean, climate change.
Yeah, exactly. But the weather was shitty. So we were limited in what we could do. So it'd be like, okay, if we were normal people, we could go to a restaurant, but we couldn't do that because we even peeked inside of places and nobody was wearing masks where we were. And it was only 2 hours north of where we are here in Rockland County. It was in Ulster County, I think, or Greene County. And it seems to be pretty heavy Trump country, and nobody was wearing masks at all anywhere. And, you know, listen, I don't want to make this political in that way. I mean, I did mention the Trump country thing just because you noticed it everywhere. You noticed the flags and the bumper stickers and all that. I didn't see the Confederate flags, at least. But you know, I can't blame people for wanting to now go to restaurants, take off their masks, if they've been vaccinated. And there are signs everywhere. There's signs where I'm in the in Rockland County that says, you know, no mask required if vaccinated. Well, how the hell, you know, that's the problem. How do you really verify that? You don't. You know, and I think the Venn diagram between people who don't want to wear masks and willing to just lie or say nothing about vaccines. I can't see a single person who didn't get vaccinated for whatever principle saying, well, I guess I'd better wear a mask then since I'm going into the store. I don't see that happen. You know, I think the Venn diagram is pretty much unvaccinated, hell no, I ain't wearing no mask, period.
Yeah, so, single circle.
Single circle.
And add in, you know, liars.
Liars, yes. So we actually came home a day early. And,
you know, I'm sorry.
Some of it was due to the weather. Yeah, some of it was due to the weather. Our hotel room wasn't really up to par. But the big issue was just I was fucking scared, you know. All I could do, you know, it's a nice place to walk around, but I can't walk around all day long, you know, even go into like a farm stand. I'm surrounded by people not wearing masks who just keep sort of coming up shoulder to shoulder on me, and I keep moving away and all that. And here's the thing, too, for people like myself, is that, you know, the social dynamics of that have now changed, because we were, for over a year, we were a society where you could say to somebody, justifiably at least, excuse me, would you mind wearing a mask? Because we were all supposed to at least do that. We were told to do that. So it wasn't considered like a, you know, an odd thing to say. But now when people are being told, well, you know what, you can take off your mask, you don't need it. And then I'm wearing a mask, is it because I'm a virtue signaler? You know, am I a fraidy cat? No, I mean, I could wear a shirt that says, you know, transplant recipient, you know, please have mercy. But, and I don't want to give my story to every stranger I come across. So, you know, I just kind of avoided the situation entirely. You know, we did the long scenic route to get home, and that was lovely. And we did find a farm stand that seemed okay, and I went there and all that stuff. But it's, I'm still scared, Robin. I'm still
Afraid. Oh, my God. You would be either stupid or have a death wish if you weren't.
Yeah. And even, you know, at work, I'm surrounded by people who are very smart, well-meaning people who love me. I love them. I really enjoy their company. And I think all or most of them have been vaccinated. I would hope so. These are not stupid people. But at the same time, you know, I still have to remind people to not get too close to me. I still work behind, I have what I call the bubble. I've got this plastic wall around my work area, and people know that to not go into the bubble, and we hand papers back and forth through the slot in the bubble and everything. It's how I have to live until whenever. And I, you know, I'm not asking for pity on this. I'm just sharing my experience. And you know, all I can ask of your listeners is that, look, you know, if the rules are the rules, and we've said all along we follow the science. So if the science says, you know, in most cases you can take off the mask, or you could go to a restaurant, you can go in a store, and if you want to wear a mask, it's optional. You don't have to, because, you know, X number of people in your state have been vaccinated, so you can feel relatively safe. I mean, I'm happy for you. I really am, that we can get back to that. And I'm happy for, like, the movie industry, if people can go to movies, theaters again and everything. I want that. But at least just be aware that if somebody, for instance, says to you, I'm sorry, but would you mind just, while I'm in here, would you mind wearing a mask? Don't ask them why. You know, don't be a dick. Just do it. You know. Consideration, and some of us aren't where you get to be. And listen, this is, you know, and again, I'm not asking for pity. This is the same. There are people with all kinds of physical limits and physical disabilities that live every day with a world that doesn't cater to them. And not only doesn't cater to them, but sometimes sort of actively bars their participation, because nobody thinks about, oh, maybe we should build a ramp to go up to that entrance, or maybe we should, you know, have closed captioning for this video on a screen or something like that. So it's a world, you know, there are still people in the world that you know, for whatever reasons, need a little bit of kindness and consideration every now and then. And I'm hoping that by sharing this part of my story, not so much that you think like, oh, poor Dan Fisher, because Dan Fisher's doing really pretty well overall. And I'm smart enough, and I've got a wife who's vigilant enough, that I'm sticking to the rules. And if the worst I can say is that I have to work behind a bubble and I don't get to go to inside a restaurant, I mean, you know, as the mother in The Sopranos would say, like, oh, poor you, you know, that's not such a terrible consequence. It could be better, but it's the main thing is I don't want to die, and I don't want to die of COVID. You know, I've been through a lot, and my surgeons and my supporters and my insurance company, everybody's gone through a lot to keep me alive at this point. It would be really effing stupid for me to then die of COVID.
Yeah, I mean, if there's such a thing as a want to, it's at the tender age of 112, having just run every last mile of a marathon, and then just kind of John Henry in at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or it seems to me like there's always some story in the news about, like, Holocaust survivor gets hit by kid on skateboard and dies or something. Or Holocaust survivor dies of COVID. I mean, these, after all of that, you know, you died of something that's kind of stupid and needless. I mean, everybody dies. I'm going to die, and that's okay. And if I die of something stupid, you know, if an anvil falls on my head or I, you know, walk into a manhole cover and disappear, I mean, that's what it is. I have no control over it. But I don't want to be there, and there are things I can do to at least prevent it, and you can help me out if you want, you know.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, a whole bunch of this remains unmeasured. That Chicago Tribune article I mentioned went into detail about T-cell responses. Yes. And then you know, there's this paragraph, but some organ transplant patients are becoming reinfected, sometimes becoming ill enough to be hospitalized. That, coupled with the fact that some patients participating in studies don't appear to have developed antibodies, indicates a weakened level of protection. I mean, that is just a must acknowledge possibility of your circumstance. You have to live in reality world. And those of us who give a damn want to live in reality world with you. I mean, you've worked in New York City for years. Last week I had the story, Dan, of the idiots. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm really, really trying to be a better person. Sometimes, though, it's hard to avoid words that seem to apply really effectively.
Here's a hint for you, though. You can go ahead and call them idiots, because most idiots don't know they're idiots. So if you call them idiots, they don't know what you're talking about. So it's okay.
Well, that's almost like absolution. So these idiots who show up outside, what was it, the same St. James Theater, which was the first theater to open because it was opening with Bruce Springsteen's show.
Right, but for vaccinated patrons only.
Right. And, yeah, from the video I looked at, Dan, it looked like there were a whole lot of these people barking and grunting and hooting and spewing their unvaccinated breath out into the air of you know, the Great White Way.
I can't explain it other than we live in a society with way too much information, and so much of the information is wrong and lies. But it's all just flying around like little pieces of little specks of dust.
Right, like little little viral particles.
And listen, I don't want to lambast your earlier call-in person who said, you know, who said, you know, there's mercury in vaccines, and you know.
No, there's not. And in point of
listen, we all know that. But what happens for the one listener who doesn't know that, and then he goes to work the next day.
I'm so glad you corrected me, because Brother Deacon Asa jumped in behind you and said, there's no mercury in any vaccine. Not just the COVID-19 vaccine. The last time there was any mercury used in any vaccine, we were still in the previous century.
Yeah.
And yet Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is out there braying about this stuff, and he's been braying about it since the last century.
Yeah. Well, and it also feeds upon this distrust of our government that really, really blossomed after Vietnam and Watergate, which is that the government's lying to us, so we might as well just invent truth. And of course, you know, then we collectively elected a president that really marketed that philosophy and went whole hog with it. I mean, we had previous presidents, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, one president, you know, well, actually a number of presidents have gone to war based on lies, you know, it's for freedom. No, it's not. It's about oil. And to say it's for oil, and maybe we can respect you at least a little more. It's not about freedom. So, but anyway, there's just, how do you, you know, all we can just keep doing, you know, I know I'm a broken record on this. And by the way, saying that somebody is a broken record is such an anachronism these days. Or there's just so, you know, how many of us have had experience with broken records in our lifetimes? I have, and you have, but anybody.
You're just a broken MP3 file.
I know. I'm just, yeah. So anyway, I hate to be a broken record, but it's just, we must continually. On your show, in our conversations, in our behavior, we must constantly correct misinformation. It must be our mission. We have to be foot soldiers in what is proper information, and we have to be as knowledgeable as we can, so that, you know, we're ready for the follow-up questions, for the what-ifs, or the both sides-ism. We have to be ready. We have to be informed. We have to know our shit, because otherwise something like, well, you know, there's mercury in a vaccine, in the COVID vaccine, that becomes a thing. There's I don't know how many people out there believe that, but they do. You know, it's not just that one guy. It's not just Robert F. Kennedy, whatever his name is. It's way too many people. You know, there's way too many people that are still not vaccinated. I mean, you mentioned Texas. I hate to tell you, but Texas is actually doing better on the vaccination front than where you are right now.
Oh, I know.
Virginia.
I know.
West Virginia is at 43.9%, and Texas is at 48.5% of the population who've had at least one dose. At least one dose.
And it is so bad that Governor Haney, I mean, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice, went so far as to say, well, these people that don't want to take a vaccine in no way, shape, form, or fashion, well, they're just playing the death lottery. And I kind of came up with the phrase death lottery, but I'm not going to send him a bill or anything. But he's right. You know, yeah. You know, he lives in that world where even a blind hog finds an acorn once in a while.
That's right.
And they are.
Even idiots are capable of wisdom once in a, you know.
Well, that's why Shakespeare put so much wisdom in the mouth of the fools.
I think Mac Davis had a line in a song once, every now and then a blind squirrel finds an acorn.
Yep.
That's right. But and you know, the worst of all, Idaho and Wyoming, look at those guys. 39.8% have had one vaccine.
Just out of curiosity, where's Alabama on this right now?
40.2. So,
oof.
Worse than Texas, but
better than Idaho.
Yeah, West Virginia at least is better than something or other. The best state right now is Vermont. They are at 74.2, and Massachusetts at 70.8. All of us along this northeastern corridor, we're doing pretty well. New York, we're at 60.5. Better. But this is the thing about New York, you know, and it's certainly something that I'm always reminded of when I travel, whether it's up to the Catskills or on my way up to Montreal to see one of my kids when they've been students there, is that, you know, everybody thinks of New York as this big liberal state because, you know, it always goes blue and, you know, presidential candidates don't even bother coming campaigning here anymore except to raise money because the state's going to go blue. But that's because of New York City. That's it, you know. That one small geographic section controls politically the whole state, the rest of the state. If you start going, you know, even in Rockland, 55% of Rockland County voted for Trump versus 43% for Biden. And it the numbers just keep, you know, going in that direction the further north you go. And so it's farm country, you know. It's gorgeous, beautiful farms in New York State. It's not all Broadway and crack dens and so forth. So that's what we still have a ways to go. We're not caught up with.
Well, that's a larger inquiry too, though. You know, all these things, everything is a statistic. Everything's a data point, Dan.
Yep.
But why? Why is it that rural areas? And, of course, you can't make a blanket statement about anything. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of rural in Vermont, but they're getting it right. But what is it about rural areas that makes them so damned consarnasted Republican?
That is a darn good question. I mean, I can only go on personal experience. I think there's factors to consider. I don't know why. But it seems like, well, first of all, one is very obviously in your face. That is white people versus not white people.
Well, I was about to say, is it because of the manifest whiteness involved?
I think that's part of it. I think the presence of and importance of religion within the community is another aspect of it. I do know, coming from my hometown, that it's a very heavily fundamentalist Christian area. And, you know, and then we know that the fundamentalist Christians have been co-opted by the Republican Party to be their party. You know, it's the party of power.
Well, it's their shock troops in the culture war.
That's right. And it can certainly weaponize enough things, whether it's, the racial aspects of things or folks like you and your LGBTQ, fellow people. And by the way, belated happy pride to you. I delighted in your photos.
But you remain
an enemy. Yeah. But, there's lots of little manufactured enemies there are others. There are a lot more others in a less heterogeneous society than there are. You know, when you get to a city where you are more dense area of people, you're going to get more different kind of people. You're going to get different colors, cultures, et cetera, et cetera. There's nothing I'm saying here that's shocking or new to you. Of course not. But I think that's got to be a lot of it. And I think there comes also sort of this pride. I don't know about you, but I mean, there's a real pride in my hometown we reject the things from outside our borders. We don't care about them. You know, I might have told you before, if I could tell you how many times somebody from my hometown has literally said these words to me, well, New York City's a good place to visit, but you couldn't pay me to live there. It's like, what the fuck? I'm not asking you to live here. And, you know, way to say fuck you to my face with a smile. I mean, I'm not, I left my hometown. I'm not going to talk too much shit about it. I'm being very careful tonight to not talk too much shit about it. Because where you choose to live, that's where you choose to live. It's fine. If you're happy not being among, a lot of people and if you want a lot of land around you, that's great. You know, I moved from the city to the suburbs. I wanted more land. I wanted better school systems, etc. I don't think like my part of the world is the be all and end all. I mean, that's the thing. It's like the thing of global warming. When you hear people say, well, I don't know about all this global warming stuff. I mean, I look outside and I see snow. You know, it's like, well, that's because it's global, dude. You are not the globe. Your backyard is not the globe. Your hometown is not the globe. It's just a very tiny fraction of it. And people who don't believe in COVID until it hits.
Yeah, but that shit kind of has to go by the wayside, doesn't it, Dan? When you live in like Lytton, British Columbia, and it's 120 degrees.
No, I don't know. I don't want to get in. I don't want to Vulcan mind meld into anybody who's a denier of that kind of science of global warming.
Well, you're not going to find any of those in this community, but. Iowa Dan just jumped in and said, why are rural areas Republican? My experience tells me lack of education and narrow perspective of the world at large.
Yeah, although, I mean, education is shitty in urban areas, too. I mean, depending on the area of the urban area. I know in New York there's some terrible, terrible school systems. And it's all about the money that goes into it, right? You know, and what kind of teachers you can hire with such shitty money. Devoted to it. And of course we know that, and I don't, you know, I want to be careful about this because a lot of areas with some of the worst educational systems have been places where with non-white students, because that's where the least amount of money and the least amount of overall community concern has gone toward. They're not supporting those schools. They would rather keep people as uneducated as possible. So they're not a threat to the, to the status quo. So it is that, but it's more than that. It's never one thing. And that's a cop out for me, I guess, to say it because then I don't have to go on about all the things because there's so much I know and so much I don't know. But yeah, it is education. Listen, people are I've heard people say in my hometown, well, there's a lot I don't know, but I know, I got common sense, I don't care about, this, that, and the other. I got a high school education. Listen, you got a high school education. It's great, but.
Yeah, there's no education snobbery here, but.
Don't put down those who might want more than that or might want to know more than what they're being told by their buddies.
And don't pretend that there wasn't a time when it was deemed to be a good thing to go further.
Absolutely. And that's still my goal. I mean, I'm still proud as peach pie that my kids now, my daughter just graduated from McGill University, and she's on her way to law school, And my son, you know, has his master's in journalism and from CUNY. And so, and my wife is still with her one class a semester at CUNY for a master's in creative writing. And here I am just sitting on my BFA I've had for the past, 25 years or so.
Funny how you say, here I am sitting on my BFA, that...
I hadn't thought of that.
There's multiple levels of meaning there, Dan.
Well, the truth is I don't have a big BFA. My FA is pretty flat and just nothing. I barely have an FA.
Yeah, it's a source of great consternation here, I can tell you that. I had a note from someone who wishes to remain anonymous, who said, I got the Moderna as a cap on the J&J vaccine because I wasn't confident in my protection against variants. The first one was at Pharmacy A and the second one at Pharmacy B. There was no red flag to say, hey, what are you doing in line again? So that's one vaccine that isn't going to be thrown away to due to some ignorant maggot.
I would just say, it's always good to consult your doctor. But I don't see any harm, I think, in a second dose like that. I think it sounds commonsensically good to me. So good for you, Anonymous.
Yes, indeed. And you based on something you just mentioned a moment ago, I did. I got referred to as yesterday. A that.
Mm.
There's all these men and all these women and that. And I said, hold on, bub. I'm not a that. I'm a she. I'm a her.
I am woman. Hear me roar.
I am not a that. But I had a friend standing next to me who said, hold on, Robin. You can be a that as long as it's that hot-ass, badass bitch. And I was like, damn, I love you. That was sweet.
We all need friends like that.
Like that. Yeah, you can be that. Yeah. But whether we're talking about the vaccine or that or climate change, all of these things, we have to be willing to speak up and speak out about them. And Lamar wants everybody to know he's not anti-vax. But he says, I'm concerned with what my children are injected with.
I can tell you what's in it. Lamar, I can tell you what's in it.
Yeah.
Here, I'll pull it up. It's not mercury.
No.
Okay. This is for at least the Janssen COVID-19 vaccine. Includes the following ingredients. Recombinant, replication incomplete, adenovirus type 26 expressing the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, citric acid monohydrate, trisodium citrate dihydrate, ethanol, 2-hydroxypropyl cyclodextrin, HBCD, polysorbate 80, and sodium chloride. Now, I don't know... Lamar, I don't know what most of that is either. I do know that sodium means salt, sodium chloride, mm-hmm. As a form of salt, and a monohydrate is a...
Ethanol means alcohol.
Alcohol, right. So, I mean, look...
And polysorbate 80? Virtually any package of prepared food, potato chips... Look, here, I got a bag of potato chips. Let's check.
That's right.
I have no business having a bag of potato chips, but it came with my hot dog. I will not be eating them. If this was not a real bag of unopened potato chips, I could not do this.
I believe that you eat potato chips.
Son of a gun. Ruffles do not have polysorbate 80 in them. Okay, we're going to have to look somewhere else.
Well, there's a point here to be made.
Yes.
And the point... Lamar, and again, I'm sorry, I don't mean to rag on you. I just wanted to make clear that nobody came away with the impression that these vaccines might be causing mental retardation because of of mercury in them, because there is no mercury in them. But I think, too, that, you know, Lamar, I, again, with my personal story, we all bring our personal stuff into it, right, into all the decisions we make in our lives. My personal experience was that doctors saved my life, that literally were the difference between me being here now and not. So when my doctors tell me something is acceptable for my body, I have to trust and believe those people. I'd be stupid if I didn't. And they have far more knowledge than I'll ever have, and far more experience than I'll ever dream of having. I'm not very good in science, Lamar. I'm not actually that smart a person in a lot of ways. Robin can really
sandbagger.
Robin can really talk the hell around me if she wants to, but I'm not a smart man. But what I do know, again, is I trust scientists and I trust science. And like Robin's potato chips, I also have to have a bit of faith in things. Right? If I reach for a bag of potato chips, if I take a moment to look at the label, and I do, because I'm not allowed to eat any salt, mind you. But if I look at the label, I'm going to see all kinds of stuff. I'm going to see sorbates and sodiums and gluconates like crazy. And I don't know what those things are, but I do know that I like potato chips. So I'm going to eat the potato chips as long as they're salt free. And the same kind of general philosophy is going to go toward what my doctors recommend. And if they say you should take that vaccine, I'm going to believe them. And I don't know what the things I recited to you are, but I did not see the word mercury. And I believe my doctors when they tell me, no, there is, this will not cause problems. Now, I wish I could convince my nephew, who is an anti-vaxxer, of these things. And you are not an anti-vaxxer. I get that. I wish I could make these points clear to my nephew, but I can't. My older sister just got the vaccine recently because a friend of hers died of COVID. And that's what it took for her, was to really to make it set in. I wish that my older sister had accepted the science all along, but it really, she had a wait and see kind of feeling about it. And the wait and see resulted in the death of a friend. And that's what it took to make her do it. So, okay, that's a harsh price to pay, but she did it. And I will visit her sometime now that she's had the vaccine. You know, I wouldn't before, but now I will. I'm talking and talking. Are you still on here, Robert?
No, I've been here all along. You're making perfectly good points. I did just check, and I'm kind of giving away one of the deep, dark secrets of the studio here. I just checked that now there's no polysorbate 80, but there's potassium sorbate in my A1 sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I get a little obsessive compulsive here and there.
So are you saying then, Robin, that they put A1 steak sauce in the COVID
there
vaccine?
Is A1 steak sauce in the vaccine. Bill Gates is going to use it to track you at the steak houses of our great country.
You see, now I don't like no steak sauce on my steak. When I go to the Golden Corral, I use ketchup.
What?
Ain't nothing wrong with that,
but I tell you what. There's another one of dirty little secrets. I don't necessarily keep the A1 back here for steak. I keep it back here because it's my sipping A1.
If I had a cowbell, I'd ring that cowbell. Not just in the morning and the evening, not all over this land. But I would.
But on this program, well, I'll ring it for you.
That's good.
Because I do. I got sipping hot sauce. I just have a hot
Seriously?
Sauce problem. Yes.
I don't understand you people, but I, you know.
You people.
God bless you.
I don't
people.
Understand that.
You that's the hot sauce people. I mean, that I don't understand.
And yes,
enjoy the pain. To associate willingly enjoy and associate pain with the consumption of food is something I don't really understand.
Oh, it's the endorphin rush. It's the endorphin rush. And you know, yes, I do now, and I can verify that, you know, Hillary was not lying, because I too carry a small bottle of hot sauce in my purse, because I'm particular about my brand.
And what is that brand?
Well, for just getting around purposes, because it's the small purse size bottle. It'll either be Crystal or it'll be Tabasco, or Texas Pete does it too. Unfortunately, there are no tiny bottles of Cholula or anything like that. But, you know, sometimes you just need some freaking hot sauce.
Well, you know, at my workplace, I've noticed, you know, people of my generation, now that we're becoming the ages that we are, let's say in our 50s and beyond, they talk about hot sauce, a lot of these people, the way that we used to all talk about sex. Nobody's talking anymore about, like, somebody they ran into and hooked up with and all this stuff. We're all talking about, oh, you got to do this one. It'll burn your intestines, but it's worth it. So. My daughter just texted me, so. I need you to vamp for a minute. I got to text something back.
Okay, no worries. I got a note from Silent R. Saying, I remember when white people rejected black blood, we are all one human. Well, it says in the Bible, in the motto of Berea College, we are all of one blood. Silent R said, I understand your life problem. I wanted to be a doctor in an earlier life, but I'm an engineer as of today. Science is my background. It's not personal. One we need to talk on the show to go to the next level. We do actually have a couple of no kidding physicians who are friends of the program, and we've got an amazing array of people. We've got a real live, honest to God, no kidding rocket scientist. We've got Paul from Parts Unknown, whose information, because he is a scientist who deals with an outfit that makes the components of the test kits for COVID-19. He has real-world experience, and for all I know, some of the advice that he's offered on this program may have saved lives. And it's the kind of thing that makes you, well, proud to be associated with a community like that. So thank you. Thank you, Silent R. Steve in New York noting, A1 steak sauce, now we know why it causes antlers to grow. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It does?
Yeah.
Does Rudolph know about this?
Well, I mean, and that's the other thing. You got to remember, male reindeer lose their antlers. So that goes to suggest that all of Santa's reindeer are actually not dudes.
They're reindeer thats.
And just to prove it, I just took a nice swig of A1. Yum.
Yum, yum, yum.
Because it's really good on, among other things. Salt. I mean, you have to avoid your salts and stuff.
Aren't there like oysters or something? Or isn't there some sort of seafood in there somewhere? Don't they put some sort of like...
There might be some... No, I think that's Worcestershire sauce that has anchovy paste in it.
Anchovy paste.
A1 has raisins.
A1.
Not that there's a similarity between raisins and anchovies. I was not suggesting that.
Well, they're both, what, of a dark color?
Well, they are that. Hot sauce in your purse, Stephen New York says, see, that shows you're a neoliberal corporate shill. Damn right. Damn right. But I saw an article earlier today that speaks to a lot of what we're talking about. And it's something I've been sort of not at odds with, but there's been some pushback on it. But... I've been disturbed by, and our friend Paul from Parts Unknown has chimed in on it, largely, I think, in agreement with me, that this business of trying to see it was born in the lab.
Oh, you mean the origins of the origins of COVID or the origins of the vaccine?
The origins of COVID itself.
Yeah. We actually found it could be true, right? I mean, there's still, aren't we still finding out about the Chinese connection? And
that, yeah, but
yeah,
the odds
originated in a place.
But the odds of it coming out of a lab are still extremely low. It may have come out of a lab insofar as some people picked it up outside, went back to work in the lab and came out of the lab and spread it around again, but not because somebody was tinkering with it in there. It's a stupid virus to be tinkering with in the first place. Because it's not that effective. But talking about you know, with the Republicans, it was made in a lab. Pramila Jayapal, a brilliant member of the House from Washington, said it's really tough because whatever's uncovered, it's going to be used in terrible ways. You almost can't have a legitimate investigation because people, you know, Republicans want it to be an ends-based inquiry where you start with, it has to have come with a lab, and then you make up whatever, you reverse engineer the argument to whatever it is that we need to say. We're going to say that so that we can say that it's, because what they're desperate to do is to turn attention away from Nitwit Nero or COVID Caligula.
Of course.
And Representative Jamie Raskin from Maryland, another brilliant member of the House, said, regardless of how it started, no origin can excuse the lethal recklessness of Donald Trump's mismanagement of COVID-19. Nothing. Presidents have a responsibility to protect public health, regardless of the origin of a public health crisis. And we've been talking about that for months, I think at this point we can safely say. You know, the bottom line is there are 400,000 out of 600,000 dead that didn't have to die. I mean, I think that's the way it broke in some of the earlier analysis, that did not have to die if there had been an even marginally competent response to this goddamn disease.
Well, yeah, the house is on fire, right? What is the most important thing to you going like, okay, while the thing is up in flames and people are screaming and throwing themselves out windows, is the most important thing to identify the origin of the fire and whether or not it was arson?
No. Right, no.
Later.
Yeah, that's later.
First put out the fire, rescue the people, save the lives, and then we look for, okay, how did this start? Was it arson? Was it deliberate? Was it an accident? What could we do to prevent future fires? That's what we do.
Yeah. But it's a bridge too far for far too many Republicans and all the maggots.
Well, listen, I believe, I don't know about you, but I think that if, and I don't want to talk about them, I really try to avoid he who shall not be named as much as I avoid Kardashians. Now, in your occupation, it's a hazard. I realize that. But
No, I have never watched even a second of Here Come the Kardashians or Honey Boo Boo Kardashian or.
Right. But I'm just making that analogy that I don't. I try not to click any of these clickbaits about you know who, with you know the same way I try to assiduously avoid. I've never clicked an article about a Kardashian. Ever. I've never watched the show either. It's not. I don't hate them. I just don't care about them, and I don't want to feed their empire any more than it's already been fed. They don't need me. They obviously seemingly have plenty of dough to spend. Okay, good for them. They won life with no you know real means of
without ever having anything. To do anything.
You know, sign their name on a makeup line or a fashion line. Take their pictures to publicize. It's fine. Whatever. But there was a point there I was making somewhere along the line before I got off on that. Something about you know who. But, oh, this is – I honestly believe, and let's see if you agree with me. I think – and maybe I've already said this. I think that if you know who had handled the pandemic in at least an acceptable manner, he could have won. I think he would have won.
Yeah.
I think he would have won re-election.
I'd like to hope not, but I think the possibility is very real.
I think that was enough to turn the purples into blue. Of like, well, you know, he says all this crazy stuff and all that, but he's good for the economy and, you know, whatever else.
And that usually is enough.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Look, I ain't been repoed.
Yeah. You know, how does the average person really gauge whether or not the economy is improving or not improving? As you know, we go on the news and oh, the stock market's up. Well, okay, do you own stock? Well, no, you know, I do actually. I've got a 401k, and that's been doing gangbusters since. Well, it's been doing gangbusters all along, but especially since the new president came in, it's been doing well.
We know about
inflation. We gauge certain things. And then other things, we just sort of go on faith. Somebody on TV says the economy's terrible, and we go, oh, yeah, the economy's not doing good. You know, there's X number of jobs, you know, lost this month. Oh, shit, that sounds terrible. At least I got mine, you know. I think a lot of people who proclaim things about the economy have no idea of how it's actually measured. And that person could very well include me. You know, I get certain things, again, from the news or how's my 401k doing or am I still employed? And it's like, okay, seems to be pretty good, you know. But at the same time, if I read about, well, you know, all these people are out of work and, you know, things are terrible and you know, houses are foreclosing left and right, I'm not just going, la, 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 I don't care. Of course, I'm like, well, that's terrible. You know, what can we do about that, you know? So, I don't know. Anyway.
No, I agree. And by the way, we just got a note from Tracy, you and I. Mm. Subject line.
Tracy, you're going to be so happy with me. Okay, go ahead.
Suffering from no-acetal disease. Dearest Dan and Robin, unfortunately, you are suffering from, along with the other melanin-challenged, what my folks and I refer to as no-acetal disease. It is a tragic disease that disproportionately affects the melanin-challenged among us, and the only cure seems to be rigorous ass-focused exercise and or adding ass implants surgically. Maybe one day there will be ass transplant surgery, where donors, like myself, would, for a large fee, of course, help our assless sisters and brothers finally be able to have the big fat asses that they have craved for centuries. Yes, I'm being silly, but I needed a break from homework and cleaning. But then, you know, we'd all have to be on drugs to make sure that our bodies didn't reject our asses.
Listen, I don't need Sally Struthers and Sarah McLachlan on TV talking about my lack of acidity. I'm fine with having none. My pants managed to stay onto my body.
Lucky you.
I'm married to a woman who seems to have no problem with the fact that I don't and she does. And, you know, she doesn't have much to grab onto, but every once in a while she grabs it, and that's all I ask.
Well, yeah, just one grab a day. That's all we ask.
Give me a grab every once in a while and let me know you still care. You know, I give you that consent.
And you know that's that. Are you in trouble yet?
Not yet. She's not listening. Okay. We're long past the stage of her listening to every episode that I'm on. It's become far less of a phenomenon and more of like a, oh, you're doing that tonight?
You're doing that again?
You're doing that again? Yeah. Well, gonna do it. Yeah, all right.
You'll have that.
Have fun. We'll see you for dinner then. I'll leave something in the fridge. Okay.
In the fridge.
You know, it's like bowling. It's like it's like my bowling night now, this kind of thing.
Well, let me ask you, and this I don't think this is going to be too terribly difficult, but you've got Skype open, right?
I do.
I would love for you to come in, if you don't mind, and I want to do the Dan works in the entertainment industry part of our conversation, and do it among the friends in our front porch group.
Okay.
So what we will do, you and I, is disconnect. I will connect to the larger Skype group, and then if you'll just go to headon.live and click the button at the top, bang, it'll carry you right into the Skype group.
I'll give it a try. This, I'm like my mom here. The Facebook is so confusing. I'm going to give it a try. See, my mom doesn't listen either, so I can make fun of her. I'm going to give it a try.
I like the fact that we were being monitored and occasionally chastised for our language by Dan's mom.
I don't think I actually told her. I forgot to publicize tonight, too. Usually I Facebook it, but I've been on Facebook a lot less, but that's another thing. Anyway, yeah, let's get to the phony baloney Hollywood stuff. And I'm going to go join the group. So I'm going to hang up with you.
Okay. And you can get there before I do. And if you get there first, you make a mark. And if I get there first, I'll rub it out.
Oh, golly. Okay. I'll do my best. Talk to you later.
All right. I'll be right there. Let's see. So I got to do that. I got to do this. Okay. That's done. Let's see. Oh, we're the boys, the chorus. We hope you like our show. We know you're rooting for us, but now we have to go. Okay, so that connection request is me. there's that. Okay, so we're in the room. Let's see. Hey, Sparky, have I got you?
Yeah, you got me.
Okay, cool, cool. So I'm in there. Dan should be along in a moment, and that'll be great. I'm afraid that before we get into the group conversation, I'm afraid I mistakenly upset John in Central PA because I'd said that, you know, the question is not why are they making that money? The question is why am I not? And John said earlier, there are only three companies in my area that have unions, and I got fired from one of them because they didn't like me. It's not that easy to join a union, especially when your company threatens you at the very utterance of the word union, and most of the shop buys into the union anti-union propaganda. I get that part. And you know, one of the things that hurt unions badly years and years ago, and Boss Man Wayne and I talked about it, was what he called the DNA test, in which if one did not have a relative in that union, one was not getting into that union oneself. One hopes that that has changed, but John went on to say, I'm sorry, but you're wrong about the union thing. You have to actually get hired at a union shop and be able to keep the job until you get past the qualifying period. I was on my last day of clearing the qualifying period at the one out of three in my line of work and area union shops I managed to get hired at. Every single person who worked there were radical maggot Republicans who hated me and ran me out. And honestly, I'm not sure it wasn't because of my political views. On top of that, so many people around here buy into the anti-union propaganda, plus threats from the companies if you even utter the word union. Basically, you're saying I should be poor and work just as hard or harder for way less because I'm not in a union. Believe me, Robin, if I could join a union, I would in a New York fucking minute. But it's just not possible in Foxville, Pennsylvania, in my line of work. I want to be able to buy a house, too. Or hell, not to have to live with my parents. And the unions do nothing to lobby the Republicans to make our lives better. Unions have limited resources, and, you know, you spend
unions
those...
Unions don't lobby Republicans.
No, they don't, because it's pointless. Because Republicans hate unions. Uniformly. And the larger issue, what I was actually trying to say, is that when we make it easier to become a member of a union, you know, that rising tide lifts all boats thing kicks in. In particular, you know, the PRO Act is out there. That's another thing that Joe Manchin is never going to allow to pass. Democrats do continue to try to make it more possible that working people can join unions and have that happen. You know, have that better standard of living happen. The problem that comes with that is that, you know, it used to be, my dad would tell me this story. He was union. He knew a guy who wasn't. But he said, because you're in a union, my company has to pay me what unions pay to keep me from joining the union. And he said, but every now and then they hand me that shit sandwich and say, eat it and smile. And I got to eat it and smile. But apparently the pay dynamic, John, where you are, is such that there's no, the company... The non-union companies feel no pressure to match what union shops are paying, which is, for instance, at odds with, the non-union mountaintop removal companies here. They would pay better than the UMWA just to stay out, just to keep their workers out of the union. Make sense? I hope I'm making sense, Sparky. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to be a union organizer. I did try it for 3 years.
I can imagine.
I got a few guys in, but it's hard to talk to somebody who has a job and then their employer wouldn't go union if today was the day that they had to.
Hate to interrupt here, but Dan Fisher just came into the head-on.live chat with a question about getting in. I checked the main page, and there is no banner for
rats. Okay.
So Asa removed it?
I don't know. Maybe he did. Is there some way for me to... Let me see here. Dan, stand by, and I'm going to see if I can
I'll put the link in the chat room.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Okay, let me do that. I'm just telling Dan via messenger.
Oh, he's in it. He just has to push join call.
Oh, okay. Just, okay. Yeah, this was a screw-up occasioned by me and me alone. So that's the problem. Okay, so there's Dan. Dan, you can turn your camera off and we'll be golden. All right, and so, and there's Tracy. Wow, Tracy and Dan and Sparky and who else do we have?
Roger.
Oh, Roger's there? Okay.
And Squeaky.
And there's Squeaky. Okay, cool. Thank you. Dan, do we have you? Working.
He's in the room.
Well, I saw his video.
I know his mic's not muted.
Maybe it's muted somewhere else.
Maybe he's got a button on his mic he needs to press.
Yeah.
Like mine. My mic, if I mute it, it won't show up on.
Oh, and by the way, John in Central PA said, I appreciate you addressing this issue for me. I'm just so sick and tired of eating that shit sandwich you just mentioned. The problem, John, is that they're feeding you the shit sandwich, and they're not paying you to eat it. The guy that my dad worked or knew was being paid well to eat that shit sandwich once in a while for staying non-union. They're not doing anything to keep you non-union.
Yeah, because, like, what happens is... Like, if you go around a shop where I work and talk to people and you bring up a union, they'll all go, oh, no, fuck that. Fuck unions, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, the people brought into the propaganda. They did. And I don't – I'm sorry. I guess I might be better because when you have a crap paycheck all the time and you can't get ahead ever, and then you hear people like on this program and it's not their fault or anything. I'm not gooning on any of you guys at all. But you hear people say, like, oh, here's a union buck going your way. You know what I mean? It just it makes me a little upset, you know what I mean? I feel like it's like a thing where it's like, I'm in a union, you are not.
Now, I can promise you everybody, none of the union people are, all the union people are, want you in a union.
I want me too, yeah.
What do you do?
I run, I've run a CNC machine. So, like, you know, you're familiar with lathe, you know, mills and stuff.
You're a machinist.
Well, a machinist has a degree or has like a paper, like they go through an apprenticeship program, and those people make a lot of money even if they're non-union, because the state requires that they have to get paid a certain amount, you know. I just am basically, I do this kind of similar, like something similar to what they do, but I'm just not certified. So I might have, like, and I have some experience in it too, but, like, I might, you know, they might be able to go in and do, like, more intricate things with the machine, you know what I mean? Because they're trained to do it. But I basically set up the machine, I make edits, I push the button, stuff like that. And, you know, and it can be really rewarding if you're in a union. Like, I make $17 an hour to do it. I know I shouldn't complain. There's some people are fighting to just get 15, but, like, that's not that good where I'm at, you know what I mean? Because prices are going up, you know, especially house prices are going up, rent's going up, all that stuff is going up. And, like, my union counterpart, I know a guy who left my company to go work for a union shop, and he makes $34 an hour. You know what I mean? So that is fully double what I make. And, you know, it's really, when I was in that union that I was just talking about, you know, even though I have some skill in it, for some reason, the last day they just said, you're out. You didn't make your seven, you didn't make it. You didn't get past your seven, your qualifying period. And those people hated me. They were constantly hounding me, going and telling the boss, you know, and this is a union shop. You're not supposed to be in bed with the boss, you know? And they're going to the boss saying like, oh, look what he's doing. Look how he's doing that. Blah, blah, blah. And they were all Republican, every single one of them. In fact, all the union people I know are actually Republicans. And they'll say things like, oh, I don't need a union because if there was no union, I could negotiate my wages and make double what I make now. And
sure, you could.
Yeah, it's not true at all. Like my buddy is a welder and he's works in a union shop, but he makes $30 an hour. And because the union dictates that he makes that and it's part of the contract. And he said, oh, if there was no union, I could make 60 an hour. And I told him, I was like, that is just not true. Unless you do scale work, you know what I mean? Where you go and get scale pay somewhere or whatever that's called, when you can go and like, say if you're a welder, go to like to a certain job site, you know, for a contract, you know, for like say 6 months or whatever, where you're working on a job site. And while you're on that job site, you make $60 an hour. I think they call that scale pay, but you might be able to do it then, but it would not be, it certainly wouldn't be permanent. And I don't know why he thinks that. All I know is that he's definitely a Republican and Trump supporter, you know, and
the union doesn't dictate the wage. The union negotiated a wage with the employer, and the union forces the employer to live up to the negotiated contract.
Sure.
That's it.
But
you
know.
Said the union dictated that he be paid $30 an hour. No, that's what you said.
I meant the contract. I know. I meant the contract dictates that. You're right. Okay. But I meant the contract dictates that.
Okay. I'm a real framing nut. And when I hear things expressed incorrectly, it really jerks my chain. That's all.
I understand. Yeah, you're right, though. I'm glad you pointed that out because, it's not the union that dictates. It's the contract that they negotiate, like you just said. Yeah. And in my shop now, I'll lose my job. If I say in front of my boss, why don't we have a union in here? I guarantee I'd be gone. Seriously. Because there's a stigma. Sorry, I cut off. I cut muted myself for a minute. But there's a stigma around it for some reason. And people around me would be like, don't say that. Don't say that. We don't want to lose our jobs.
But you that's illegal.
I know.
For you to be fired.
Yeah, it's really illegal, but it takes forever and a day to adjudicate your rights because they have to be adjudicated.
I understand that. But we need to keep talking everything on the precise number instead of what the right-wing frame has tried to make people believe about how bad unions are and about how the union pushes it and all. But remember, union contract is nothing more than a contract between a group of workers and the boss. And the union is the big brother standing behind you with the stick that forces management to live up to the contract they agreed to.
And it's a wonderful thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to dog on it. I'm just pointing out the fact that it just seems like people who are in unions around here, at least, they care so little about it that they're so comfortable that they think, oh, you don't need a union. My friend tells me all the time, you don't need a union. You don't need a union. You just need to get your skill up better or something like that and negotiate, you know, and it's like, all right, well, I don't see how that is. And also where I work too, you know, I'll look at somebody's pay stub, somebody that does the same exact thing I do, and I look at their pay stub, and holy shit, they make $3 more an hour than I do, you know, because maybe they did negotiate it. I don't know, but I think we should all have unions. I wish I was in a union. When I was working at that union shop before I got fired, you know what I mean? I was so proud of it. I was going around telling everybody, I was like, I was wearing the union T-shirt everywhere I went. You know what I mean? I was proud of it because I thought, you know, I'm in a union now. I'm going to be good. I'm going to be set for the rest of my life. And here I am 3 years later, and after I've been fired from that place, I'm making $10 less an hour than what I was over there. And I'm just cannot get ahead no matter what I do. Like, I was about ready to get ahead, and then I had to get a tooth worked on. Next thing you know, I'm $1,500 behind where I was. And $1,500 is a hell of a lot of money to me, you know.
I don't know many. I don't know who many for whom it isn't. So can you see Sparky? Because my interface is weird. Is Dan in?
Yeah, Dan's in. Is Daniel Fisher?
Okay, now let me.
He's muted.
Yeah, all you got to do is unmute your mic, Dan. Wherever that is on your interface. No, you're in there now.
He's still muted.
Well, I have screwed everything up this evening. Shame on me.
John, if you want to know about the IBEW, I can explain to you what goes on there, because that's all I know.
Well, and Arnold just jumped in and said, well, I completely agree with John. I feel that in my heart and soul. I know the narrative. It's not true, but I know that feeling. I've been in the room. A little advice, because Arnold handles a bunch of tech stuff, too. Close everything and start again, Dan, he says.
Am I in now?
There, you are. Don't touch anything. You're there.
Great. Okay.
Glory. Because, you know, you're another union guy.
This is true, and it's one of the greatest things that ever happened. And I don't mean, listen, I feel bad for anybody that has problems. It's, you know, I got in because of the work of decades of people ahead of me. I'm standing on the shoulders of people who fought and risked injury and even death in order for me to be a union member. And I'm living with that privilege, and I don't forget it. And I'm sorry that so many people have to still fight and still that it's an issue at all. I mean, that some people are like, well, it's those crazy union dues. It's like, dude, you know, I pay 2% out of my annual wages for my union dues. It's 2% of my total income. It is so frickin' worth it. You know, I've got a top flight healthcare system. You know, I've got the Cadillac of healthcare programs here. I've got a pension. I've got an annuity fund set up. I've got 401k. I've got a contract. You know, I'm not going to tell you what I make an hour, but it's really good. And I'm able to live, you know, a life in New York, one of the most expensive states, because I'm a union member.
And for how long, Dan?
For about 25 years now, I guess since 94.
How hard was it to get into the union you're in?
It was hard for me, only in that, that's a trick question in a way. For me, it was a thing of, in what I do props in film and TV. And so what we had to do then was we had a test that we had to take. And part of it was a, what's called a practical, and the other part was a written test. And if you passed that test, then you would have to be voted in by the membership. Now, passing the test is something I did fairly easily. I mean, I studied for it. The practical was things like, well, load blanks, identify different types of blanks, and load in quarter loads into a gun, and then shoot blanks from a gun, and show how to do that properly and safely. And then another thing was like knot tying. Another thing was like plumbing. So it was like you have to have skills, and you have to show that you know how to use those skills. On the other hand, it's no secret that my local 52 and other unions, you know, there was a history of nepotism going on there. There was a history of exclusion at one time, that if you weren't somebody's nephew or you weren't somebody's son, especially of the male variety, it took a long time before women were part of that, were part of my local. But, you know, you weren't in. You didn't get to be in the union unless you were connected in some way or another. And then by the time I tried to join in the early 90s, things had loosened up a lot. And there's a long story behind that. I won't go into it. And then now it's gotten even more about, can you pass the test? Can you not pass the test? And then whether or not you're related or connected or white or all of that is not so much an issue anymore as it once was.
Yeah, we had an apprenticeship test.
Yeah. And that's what it should be. It should be about what your skills are. And, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't pay union dues anymore. The union pays me.
Yeah, you made it to the long walk to the computer keyboard portion of the program.
No, all my union dues
mm-hmm.
go into a union pension fund, and then a percentage of it, and then it pays me back when I retire. I've already got back everything I ever paid in union dues.
Oh, yeah. And plus, listen, my union dues, I think they're still tax deductible. I think they're still... Did Trump take that away? I can't even remember. For the longest time, they were. But whatever I pay, 2% is nothing. Nothing compared to what I get back from. And I happen to be in a boom industry, as we've talked about, very profitable industry. So I'm lucky in that. But listen, the economy seems to be doing great right now. We should all be, you know, union members in a thriving economy and enjoying the spoils of what is supposedly a very good economy.
But I'm not at all. I'm to the point where I will never, ever get to live a middle-class life, guys. Oh, never. Dude. I'm telling you. Like, I won't. Like, it's just that's how far behind I am from everybody else because of where I'm at and stuff, you know, because of the profession I'm in and how hard it is to get into something like that. You know, I'll never get ahead.
I hate to even ask this question. Is there a possibility you would do so elsewhere?
I mean, I'd have to maybe switch careers. Like, I know the U.S., the Postal Service is hiring, and I'm thinking about trying to get into that somehow. You know what I mean? And just to switch careers altogether. That's the only thing I can think of.
Are you
a
veteran?
No.
Oh.
Just kind of a ballpark thing, John. Arnold in PA would like to know kind of your age range.
Oh, 31.
That's kind of
still
specific.
Young enough to, yeah.
Yeah.
Just as a tidbit of information, starting in 2018 and through 2025, union dues and all other employee expenses are no longer deductible, even if the employee can itemize deductions. However, if the taxpayer is self-employed and pays union dues, right, those dues are deductible as a business expense.
Right. I don't think I'm considered self-employed, even though I don't work for any one company. That's shitty. But let's get back to this guy.
Arnold says you'll be fine. Life isn't over till 38, so your life isn't over yet.
Gary Taylor has his hand up.
Okay, go, Gary.
Yeah, I've worked for long-distance phone companies for 35 years, all non-union. But whenever we'd get pressure from a union guys coming in and everything, we'd all get 20% raises, you know. So when I retired in 2019, I was making pretty good money by that time. But the only reason I was making that money is because they didn't want the union to come in, and they would pay us about the same as what the union was, just to keep the union out.
What's because probably also did you have a pension fund or anything like that set up for you?
No, we just a 401k is all we had.
Yeah, I mean, because it's still cheaper for them, even if wages are the same, it's still cheaper for them to have non-union rather than union employees. They don't have to pay into P&W or any of that.
We contribute a lot more to our own retirement.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is another example of how a good, strong union in the country raises the boat for everybody else.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird to hear this about Pennsylvania because, you know, PA was always, I mean, one always had the sense that, you know, unions were strong there, but yeah, not so much. I just got a note from John, different John in PA. We apparently have a fraternity of John in PA now, who says here in Pennsylvania, GOP school teachers are refusing to join the teachers union because the law makes the union defend and bargain on their behalf without paying dues. Yeah, free riders. And you know that, and that has been a fetish object for the Republicans since Christ was a corporal in the army of God.
And that was a Supreme Court case, not a law.
Yeah. That's not something that...
It's the Republicans. Yes.
Well, I mean, the ultimate goal of the Republicans is to destroy unions because unions give them a sad. Hey, Dan, let me run back with you here for a second, because I wanted to kind of get into the what's Dan been up to portion.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, listen, I'm happy to have joined in this group too, and I don't want it to, you know, I don't want to deny anybody their voice or their moment if they need it.
No, but I mean, the reason I said that is because, you know, you said in a prior conversation that, and I think this was pre-COVID, frankly, but you said, you know, there's never been a better time to get into the business you're in.
This is true.
Because we're kind of in a golden... I mean, it blows my mind to look at all the original content that's being produced.
They really can't make it fast enough. It's really like what cars were to the post-World War II America, where anybody could just walk into a factory and get a job on the assembly line. That's what movies and TV are right now. As long as they're making it in whatever area you're in, and it's not all about New York or L.A., you know, they're making it in, they're making stuff in Georgia, they're making stuff in Louisiana, they're making stuff in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It's a boom industry. And unfortunately, America does not have, you know, hold the market share on car manufacturing anymore, but we do have, we do run the world when it comes to entertainment. We entertain the world. And, you know, as much money as a movie will make, for instance, in the United States, when it's a hit, it'll make, you know, five times that by the time it travels around to the theaters in China and the theaters in Spain and Japan and so forth. It's the world loves American movies and movie stars, music, you know, everything. We entertain the world. So there's all kinds of jobs for all kinds of skill levels. If you can weld, if you can use your hands and build something, you can do it. You can get on something. Now, we do have a union here, and that's the thing too. I'm not saying everybody come on up here and you'll get instant jobs, because you know, we have to hire union people first. But I will tell you that because it is a boom industry, there is right now, my union has a system set up where people who at least apply for union membership before they are accepted into the union, if you're an applicant, you can then be hired as what's called a permit worker, and you can work alongside union people and pay your union dues out of your check and get union wages and P&W. And all the things that come with that. And
what
and
union are you in?
I am an IATSE, International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, and it is Local 52, which is one of the oldest locals in the United States. And that covers the New York area, both the city and upstate, and Philly, and parts of other, I think the Connecticut area, and Pennsylvania area.
It sounds like there's a bunch of transferability going on there, because I mean you had to show proficiency in plumbing?
Yeah, because in props, a prop is sort of a general term for what we do in my particular craft. But I mean I've worked as both a prop person on set and also a set dresser. And also in the field of props, the same people that take the test that I've taken with the gun and everything, set decorators have to take that very same test. So even though it's very unlikely that a set decorator will have to handle a gun with a blank in it, they still have to know how to do it if they want to pass the test, because it's like that's the prop test. And it's sort of like, well, you want to join the union? Here's a hoop. You don't want to jump through it? Okay, that's your choice. But me, I jumped through every hoop put in my path, and I'm glad I did. You know,
what do you call the ending, the trail of the credit, any credits?
Yeah, the end credits, sure.
If you look at the end credits, any movie you watch, I'll bet you see your union bug at the end of it.
Yeah, a whole string of union bugs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And yeah, so all of the, you know, there are still, listen, I did 7 years of non-union film before I joined 52. I mean, the last 2 years of my non-union were waiting to be let into 52. I passed the test about 5 years in, and it took 2 years to actually get me in because of the process of the voting happening at a meeting with enough members and so forth. But so I did 7 years, and when I started out non-union, I was making $50 a day flat, no overtime, in New York City in 86. And then eventually I made it all the way up to $200 a day flat, no overtime. That was sort of my peak earning ability. And that's not terrible money, $200 a day, but in New York it is. It's not great. But I managed to you know, to survive, and I live cheap. But then also, too, it was just about conditions and safety and people not lying to me and not being able to get away with lying to me. And that's where a contract really, really is essential, because a contract is a contract. And I've been a shop steward. I was shop steward on the original Law and Order, the one with Jerry Orbach. I was on shop steward for 3 seasons. And my thing was always, whatever's in the contract, that's what we go with. And sometimes union members would gripe about something and come to me and say, how come it has to be this way? And I'd look it up and I'd say, well, the contract says it has to be this way, so we have to abide by that. And by the same token, if I saw something that the producers weren't adhering to, I'd call them on. I'd say, well, we're not getting this, let's say, hazard pay for being in a hazardous filming situation, potentially hazardous. We get an upgrade in pay. And it's like, well, we don't want to do that. It's like, well, you have to. It's in the contract. So I've always been strict about that. And I have the luxury of that by union membership.
And let me ask you, Dan, the extent of the dynamic that's at work insofar as, you know, when you're on a shoot, just about everybody on that set is in some sort of union, right?
Oh yeah,
from the Directors Guild to the actors to the electricians, lighting, sound.
This is correct. There are a few exceptions. We have what are called production assistants. Those are people who are very young or just starting out in the business. Maybe they don't even know what they want to do yet, but they do know that they like movies and TV shows and they want to be a part of it. Or somebody told them, hey, you know, if you want a job, I can get you a job as a PA. And, you know, at first, those are non-union positions and the pay is not great, but the idea is to get your feet wet, to sort of take a look around and see, well, what are the jobs on a film set? And what might I be interested in doing? Well, not everybody can be a director. You know, not everybody can be a producer or a star. But there are, you know, there are what are called grips and electrics. There are people operating the camera.
Best boys.
And the lights. Best boys are basically the assistant to the head gaffer or the
head
electrician.
By the way, this is just silly, but not really. Has the gender been taken out of best boy yet?
Not yet. It's slowly evolving. Cameraman is no longer acceptable.
Camera operator?
People. Camera operator or camera person. That's right, because you don't have to use a dick to operate a camera.
Wait a minute.
There's also another language.
Being a dick is reserved for the producers, right?
That's right. Well, if you've got the money, you can do what you want with that dick, as long as you don't... actually, you can't even do that these days.
Nope. Thank you.
Thank you, me too. But even the term... For hair and makeup and costumes, one of the terms that's been used for a long time, you won't see it in the credits, but one of the terms used is vanities. Like, when they want hair and makeup and wardrobe to come in for what's called last looks before the camera rolls, to make sure the star looks their most absolutely glamorous, they'll say, okay, bring the vanities in for last looks. And that is now going away. It's like, well, that's an insulting term. That's a derogatory term. We don't want to be called vanities anymore. It's like, okay, language evolves. Understood.
And oddly enough, even though the language is changing, the industry is not collapsing.
That is right. You know, there are people that are always like, oh, come on, don't be so sensitive. It's like, look, all right, you don't want to be called this thing. Don't be called the thing. Just don't use a. You don't have to use a word. Why are you holding on to the use of a word? Just change the word. It's real easy to do. Use operator instead of man. It's easy. I can do that. You know, refer to if somebody was once a he and is now a she. just change the pronouns around a little bit. Anybody.
It ain't that complicated.
It's really not.
This is kind of slightly off topic, but one of the things that I noticed is that and you know, cis girls do it too. You guys. Or hey man. And when somebody objects, oh no, it's just a generic term. Okay, tell me the last time you slept with a man. Tell me the last time you slept with a guy. And of course, you're saying this to someone who is not a heterosexual female or a gay male. And suddenly the light goes on, and they're, oh, wait a minute, maybe it is a little bit of a problem.
Yeah. And it's really, the effort is so slight. But anyway, so yeah, there is a, there are so many different skills that are, yes, union positions, and that are necessary. I mean, I know a lot of people who were once in the world of rock and roll that became sound people. One of my prop assistants had been the guitarist and co-songwriter for the Psychedelic Furs.
John. No shit.
Yeah, and John has worked with me on a number of jobs because, you know, after a certain amount of time, you know, the royalties dry up and so forth, and so he's a prop person. And there's a guy named Vince Reed, who was once in Modern Lovers. He did that bass part to I Melt With You, that doom, doom, doom.
Oh, Modern English?
Modern English, right. And yeah, he's now a sound person.
Yeah, but no way have the royalties dried up for Melt With You.
No, but...
you can't live on it.
I guess you can't live on it. They haven't melted those royalties, but...
I do, but I am dating myself. I do kind of hate it that you can't live on the royalties from Love My Way.
I wish you could, because it's a great song. It deserves to be played forever and ever, every day.
Oh, and Tracy's got her hand up. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Trace.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Oh, you know, getting along. You're studying, though, right?
Yeah.
And cleaning.
Yeah, I'm getting to meet my sister-in-law. I don't know if I've told you, Jan's adopted. And so a couple of years ago, we did an Ancestry.com thingy, and she found her siblings.
Oh, how cool. And,
yeah, so she's actually met her sister. We went to, because I guess she lives in some small town in Arizona, and they actually met in 2019, you know, right, you know, before the world became COVID, and I didn't meet her, and so they've been talking about getting to get her coming out here, and so she's coming out next week, and so yeah, I have to clean. I did hire a housekeeper, but you know, you got to do that cleaning before the housekeeper thing comes, you know.
My wife does that. Well, we haven't had a housekeeper since the kids were super little, but yeah, she used to do that.
Right. So at my room, I'm sitting here amongst all of my Black study books and all this and trying to figure out. Jan's like, well, aren't you going to sell these back? So I'm like, no. Yep. Biology books I will sell back, but none of my Africana study books and none of my Black feminism books. And so now I'm just trying to figure out where the fuck I'm going to put all this shit. But anywho, as far as the union thing is concerned, I was one of my very first jobs. I was in the 80s. I was a cashier at Ralph's, I got hired. I had to, you know, like you said, pay my dues. I, you know, came in, and by the time I left, I was a journeyman cashier. I won't. And okay. And so then by the time I left, I was making like $20 an hour, and that was in 1990. And I left when I was in the 90s, 91 or something like that, and I was making $20 an hour. And so whenever I hear people screaming $15 an hour, I just chuckle, because I'm like, not in LA, you can't do shit with that. But when I was in the 90s,
Tracy,
I was
getting,
huh?
How many years did you have to work to vest your pension?
I didn't stay long enough to get my pension, but I would have had to work like 10 years.
How many years did you work?
4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, trust me. If I wish I could have hung on a little longer, but it was because I hurt my knee and all this other stuff, so I couldn't do the work. But still, it was just like I had the best health insurance. I had, you know, I don't know what it's like now. I mean, it's been over 30 years, and I don't know how strong that union is. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, when I had Alex, I had, you know, I was in a birthing suite. I was in the hospital for like 2-3 days after I had him. I paid nothing for when I got my medication. No, I think I had a $2 copay. And that was for the whole prescription. So if I had like 3 or 4 different medications on a prescription, that was it, $2, you know. And I just, just the fact that in the early 90s, I was making $20 an hour. And, you know, people are screaming, we're going to incrementally give you 15. Fuck that. And if that's if you could get, you know, a full-time job in the first place, that part, you know, I mean, here in L.A., it's going to cost you. I don't know anybody in L.A. that's paying less than $1,500 a month for rent. And that's for a studio. You know?
Yeah. I was super lucky, Tracy. I was living in New York in a series of like laughably cheap places that I just got super lucky. Luck has had a lot to do with my ability just to stick around here. And
exactly. Yeah. I mean, when I was basically, even though I was, you know, technically part-time, I was never full-time as a cashier, but I was able to work like at different stores. That's what I used to do. I would, you know, farm myself out to different stores and make myself available. Uh-huh. But even working part-time, I was able to afford an apartment. My apartment was $300 a month. You know, I mean, it was just my wages were commensurate with what I, you know, was what I would, you know, had to pay out for, you know, my apartment, my, you know, car or what have you. I can make it. I worked 2 jobs because I wanted to, and not because I had to. You know, and now you have to work 2 or 3 jobs just to cobble together 1. So, yeah, this thing about, oh, you're fine. You know, $15 an hour is enough and all this. I'm like, not here.
No. I mean, Huntington, West Virginia, a living wage is $22 an hour. And nobody's talking about $22 an hour.
No.
Did you hear about the Oxnard story, Tracy?
No.
The city's got a bunch of COVID money, and they're going to send $1,000 to all the essential workers, the people in the grocery stores, the CVSs.
Wow. See, that's what they're – I mean, you know what happened out here in L.A.
And the UFCW was in negotiations, I think.
Well – because they needed it. And you saw what happened in parts of L.A. where they closed down Ralph's and Food for Less, and only in the black neighborhoods or what have you, because especially like in Long Beach, they enacted a hero's pay for an additional $5 an hour. And I think they did it for L.A., city of L.A. as well. And because of that, Ralph's decided to close stores. And I have to say that I haven't shopped at Ralph's since. The only thing I still do at Ralph's now is because my I know the pharmacy there, and they're, you know, I don't have to go through any shit when I have to, you know, change medication or anything like that. It's no big deal. So that's the only thing I still have at Ralph's is my medications. Other than that, I don't shop at Ralph's anymore for that very reason. How dare you close stores? You know, in areas that's already suffering from being a food deserts in the first place. And you're saying all of a sudden, once you have to do the hero's pay, those stores are no longer profitable. Kiss my ass. I think besides Amazon, one of the main industries that was, you know, kicking ass over COVID was the grocery industry. So you cannot tell me that they weren't making any money. But, you know, who am I? I'm just, right, you know, a lowly.
Yeah, who are you?
Person. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it just annoys me when they, you know, corporations you know, in order to make more money, people lose their jobs. And that's one of the things that I learned recently in one of my, in my Black Studies economic class. I had no idea. This is why you have to take economics, and especially economics in relations to Black people, how, you know, I mean, I still don't know a lot, but how the corporate structure works and how they even, they will lay off people and cut the, in order to make the bottom line bigger. So for their shareholders, even if the, you know, they're making enough money, but they're not making quite enough. So they'll fire a bunch of people and you know, send their jobs overseas or whatever. And for what? Just so, you know, somebody can get yet one more yacht or what? Oh, God. The more I learn about capitalism, the more it makes me want to throw up. But, you know, that's just me. So, hi, everybody. How y'all doing?
Hey, girl. Hey.
Hey, girl.
Go, Dan.
Well, I mean, there's so many things that Tracy said of so much value. I mean, I don't want to be the one to just go like, yeah, right on, you know, over and over again. But your final point, I mean, it's always about, you know, really it comes down to the individual, protecting his or her ass. That is with the expectation, yes, that one has an ass to protect. That is, if you are a CEO, you are like a major league baseball manager. You've got, you know, you've got a certain number of years before you're going to get fired, and you're hoping that you stay on long enough that when you are fired, you're going to have a nice little golden pack, parachute accumulated. But until then, your job is that every single quarter there's a goal of how much the value has to increase of the company, and that you always have to top what you did in the previous quarter. And so this is an unrealistic expectation. You know, how can you just keep going up and up and up and up and up without eventually there being a down? When that happens, somebody gets fired and et cetera. So, yeah, what you were describing, it's a way of artificially maintaining those numbers, so at least looks good on the page. And if some person at ShopRite or Ralph's or McDonald's, you know, has to go home that day and say, "Honey, I lost my job," well, just go get another job, as if that's the easiest thing in the world. But the reason I raised my hand a long time ago, and Tracy, I know nothing what I just said is anything that you don't know. You're a very learned person. It's obvious. But I just wanted to say too, $15 flipping hamburgers thing as some sort of like justification for either not having a minimum wage or how it's somehow wrong to have a minimum wage of like, you mean to tell me some kid in high school is flipping hamburgers for $15 an hour? It's like, first of all, have you ever flipped hamburgers? It's hard frickin' work. If you just, I've not done a whole lot of flipping hamburgers. You know, I've lived a lucky life. But if I had, I mean, what I have no problem with not, you know, I have no problem doing that job, just except I'd have to accept the fact that it's hard freaking work flipping those burgers on your feet all day long. Working at Ralph's, I'm sure that was like, oh, my God, how hard is that? You're on your feet all day long. Customers is coming and coming and coming and coming with their expectations and their questions. And I have a coupon, and I don't care if it's 6 months out of date. I still want to get that 30 cents off my cat food.
And when I started, it was before they had scanners.
Before they have what?
Scanners. You know, when you just scan the PC.
Oh.
So that part.
Yeah. It's work.
And, how'd you do it? Did you manually put the number in? Or how'd you do that?
Basically, I mean, you just...
John's not being a smartass, by the way.
No, I know. No. It was... They had... Everything had price tags on it. And you had the buttons to show what department it was coming in from. Now, eventually, not long after I started, they started implementing the scanners, which was nice. It's hard to believe that was new technology once upon a time. But once they, you know, implemented that, you know, the scanners, it made it easier, but it was still buggy, and it was a lot of hard work. And like you said, not only was I on my feet, but I was, you know, at one point while I was working at Ralph's, I was pregnant. And so, you know, but because I was a union employee, I had, you know, protections, you know, that if I wasn't feeling well, or if, you know, at one point, if I needed it, I could have had a stool at my cash register.
I was going to mention that, Tracy, because it's so much. I don't know how many, you know, you live in civilization. Dan, you live in civilization. Roger lives in civilization. I think most of us do. I just don't.
I live in civilization.
Yeah. Everybody but me lives in civilization. Everybody but me lives in civilization.
Right.
But here's one of those things. When, you know, you talk about the time you spent on your feet, you know, and you know, when you were pregnant, you could have had a stool. We finally got an Aldi in Beckley. And it blew my mind. I walked in there, and all the checkers are sitting on stools. Of course, Aldi owns Trader Joe's, and all the checkers at Trader Joe's sit on stools. And, you know, you can stand up if you want to, but you don't have to stand there all day. Why in God's name is that such a freaking hurdle?
I'm telling you, you know, a bathroom breaks. And, I mean, like, I'm right now I'm finishing this up. I applied for this position to be a community service person, and I got it. It's a temporary position, but my job is teaching people the rights that they have in the state of California as far as, you know, family leave. Like, it's primarily focused on African-American families, but, of course, anybody can use this information. But what women or birthing people are entitled to as far as time off.
Nice save, by the way.
I'm getting there. I was sick, you know, talking about you the other day about how hyper aware I am now about my words, because, you know, my favorite thing is to say dude. I mean, and you know, I don't really say hey guys. I really never really been that.
You get a dispensation. You can dude me anytime you want to, because you're from the fucking Valley.
I'm from the Valley. So it's like, and I grew up, you know, going to school in the Valley in the 80s. And so dude is, you know, is just what we say. It hasn't, I don't think dude has gender. I know, but I have gotten side-eyed from people when I say dude, and I'm like, dude, seriously? It's not.
And see, Tracy, this is one of those moments where what I was saying a moment ago works. Dude has no gender. Tell me next time you have sex with a dude.
Right.
Oops.
It's like, okay, dude. I
love
that word.
I know. Like, I went to law school with a really, really cool girl, and everybody, and I mean up to and including the dean of the College of Law, was dude.
Seriously, dude. I mean, and for me, if I dude you, that means you are just the epitome of fucking cool, man. You know, because everybody doesn't get dude. Everybody, nah. I don't dude everybody. That's, you know, you're in an echelon of just amazing me, you know, but I have to watch what I say. And because, and like you guys, I think you guys were talking about it earlier. It doesn't take but a minute. It's not even a minute. It's just being aware. And people slip up, you know. You know, the other day, I think because I hadn't been on the show or on the call for a while, and I called and I said Bob, and I'm like, oh wait, no, you know, because it's like, wait a minute, when we talk on, you know, each other, I just say naturally Robin, is no big deal, but it's just, you know, but I have to be allowed to, you know, make that mistake. And
absolutely, and it's all about it's all about good faith, and. You know, part of it all is also, I mean, I feel responsible because, A, voice is still pretty much the voice, and B, my opening for the intro to the program says, Bob, you sign into Skype, I'm Bob, send me an email, it's Bob, you go on Twitter, it's Bob, you know, the only place I've been able to change successfully was Facebook, which was surprisingly simple. But
I want people. I mean, the whole, okay, because Harold, I'm black and I'm a woman and I'm queer, and so fuck if, you know, people have said shit and said things to me, and, you know, like saying, you know, Negro, or, you know, I mean. know, stuff like that. And I'm like, no, you just don't do it. And if I correct you, don't get offended. You know,
My pink little ears perked up the other day. I saw a Latina commenting on a thread, and I don't, you know, maybe she identifies as black. I don't know, but she had a Latinx name and looked Latinx. And she said she was speaking to someone, and she spelled it. She said, "I said Kenee space Grow, comma, blah blah whatever." I'm like, wait, we're doing that now?
No,
I'm not okay with that.
No, it's just I you know, don't. If you got to go through all these, you know, things, hoops and, you know, things to say a word or do a word, then maybe you shouldn't be saying it. You know, I mean, like, I still, and you know, when I, depending on who I'm speaking to, I do, and I don't use it very often anymore. I use the N-word, but that's only as a term of endearment. Or if I'm talking about somebody, again, in certain company, acting a certain way, and you know, and it's like I call in shit, you know, and it's just there's just certain. I mean, it's like what you know, when white people do shit, and you're a white person, you're like, you just shake your head. But unfortunately for me, as a black person, when a black person does something, it's for the entire race of black people, and you know, and that's a whole nother conversation about racial politics and how, you know, one black person is, you know, how all of us act. But there's just certain things that my folks do, and I just like, oh, really, y'all? And, you know, but that's, you know, like I said, it's a whole nother conversation, but words matter. And, you know, when you say things, and because when you say something or you call me outside of what I identify with, and you know, like I said, there's those times that you make a mistake and you don't realize, and you know, I give you that grace. But when you intentionally, you know, go, you know, say and do things, and it's violence to me. And it's, you know, and it's just like, wow, you really went there. You know, that subtle shit that, you know, and then like I think you said this, Dan, about, oh, you're just being too sensitive, or you're overreacting, you know. And I am so tired of the gaslighting. You know, I have spent decades dealing with gaslighting. It has debilitated me to the extent that, you know, I'm always questioning who I am, what I am. Am I supposed to be here? Can I be here? And people just do not understand how debilitating people's perceptions and people's words and what they do to black people. I'm just saying. Now, anyway, I'm off my soapbox. So,
well, I got to tell. We're over time, but I got to tell a quick story. y'all might get a kick out of this. So, my magnificent partner, Agnes, who does so much for me, I had to take her across the river because she is babysitting for our grand puppies while our daughter is on a little holiday, a little 4th of July holiday. So she's over there puppy sitting, and they're beautiful puppies. They're wonderful. But we stopped at Kroger, since we were talking about Ralph's. We stopped at Kroger because there were some things that she wanted, and you know, we needed to get some coffee and some half and half, because, you know, there was no coffee over there because they're not coffee drinkers, but they do have a coffee pot. So at least I didn't have to get a coffee pot. And we were down the like soaps and stuff aisle, and I saw this kid. Looked like maybe ninth grade girl, maybe eighth grade, ninth, maybe going into ninth grade, just guessing. But she was on her phone, and she had her earbud in. And it makes me happy to say what I'm about to say, because I'm just living my life now. I do what I got to do, and I go out, and I go where I got to go. And I was in the grocery store. We were in the grocery store. And I'm just pushing the buggy around, getting the stuff that's on the list. I'm not looking around to see if anybody's looking at me anymore. I don't give a fuck. I'm living my authentic life. I don't do that any more than I did before. And so I saw the little girl and I didn't pay any attention. And she seemed to be looking my way, but she looked like she was on her phone. And, you know, I'm just a dippy 58-year-old blonde, okay? No, I mean, that's self-deprecating. I shouldn't say that. That's bad for my karma, as Tara would say. But anyway, so we're halfway down the aisle, and because she is so much sharper than me, Agnes picked up on something. And I was just chattering away. Well, you know, do you want this one? Do you want this one? You know, which one? I mean, you know, you might like that one. And meanwhile, Agnes bends down to the lowest part of the shelf and looks away from me and turns her head toward the little girl who had followed us down the aisle for some reason and flipped her off and mouthed at her the word run. And all of a sudden the girl tittered and skedaddled down the aisle and around the corner. And a little bit later, she's still following us. And I was a little bit, what? And at one point, Agnes said, you just go on. Go get the rest of the list. I was like, okay. I do as I'm told. And what she explained to me in the car was that the little girl was sending live video to some platform and laughing at me. Agnes is so much sharper on things like that than me, because I'm happy in my authenticity. I don't give a damn. But she wasn't going to have a damn bit of it. And she told her to skedaddle again. And that time she did. And she said, I was ready to say, let's go find your parent and let's go find a management person. But it just blew my mind.
If you don't mind my interrupting.
No, not at all.
Story. It reminds me, though, of something Tracy had just said not long ago, which is that Tracy is aware that whatever her actions are, whether it's fair or unfair,
yeah,
it represents something of all who share her identity. And she didn't ask for it. She might not want it. But she has to represent.
That's why, I mean, that's why I thought of it immediately,
Dan.
That's
what you have to do. Yeah, you have to represent whether you want to or not. You have to set the ignorance straight whether you want to or not. It's an unfair burden upon you, but it's one that has to be done, I'm afraid. And I say this with all the damn privilege in the world. I got
a little talk in the car from Agnes, Dan. She said, you got to be, she said, I said, I didn't care. I wasn't paying attention. She said, well, you have to now. Welcome to our world. You have to now. So.
Exactly. You have those things that you don't, you know, like you said, you know, your privilege kept you from having to deal with. And now you are in a whole nother realm.
Yeah.
And the, like you said, oh, I don't give a damn. And typically I say, you know, I am unapologetically black and I love my blackness. And it's taken me a whole lot of years to get to this point. But even with that said, I have to be extremely careful about how I react to situations because, you know, somebody opens
angry
up their
black
camera.
Woman.
Yeah, the angry black woman. Even if I'm justified in, you know, if I'm justified in my reaction, but I can't be the angry black woman, you know? And so what do we do? It's, you know, again, and you know, Robin knows what I'm going to say. It's so exhausting, you know, and you have to do all this stuff. And then, you know,
what do you do? Even if you're in the right, what do you do? You know, should I have turned around and done my best Joe Pesci impression and said, "Do I amuse you? Am I here for your entertainment?"
Well, or
you know, and that would have went over their head. And yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm always in danger of that fear of becoming a meme. You know, it's just
well,
like,
for all I know, I may be.
Right. You just may be. And I know how you feel because, again, but there's times when it'll happen, and it has happened, where I don't care. And, yeah, I was, you know, not long ago I was at a Cracker Barrel and in line waiting to get seated. And this white guy, well, I've been waiting for 30 minutes. And so have I. I was just smart enough to wait in my car, you know, so step back. And I know it scares Jan terribly when I, you know, get all militant. But I wasn't even being militant. I'm like, wait your turn. But don't, you know, don't be a brat. Or, it's just I'm tired of these people. I am tired of white male privilege. And I'm tired of white female privilege. I'm just tired of it. And I'm tired of being held to this, you know, idea of how I should react or not react under certain situations. You know, if I ever do, like my friend wants me to do a TED Talk, oh, my God, the things that I can talk about. But
yes.
It's like it is so layered and there's so many things just.
And it's and if you ever do get to do your TED Talk, Tracy, it'll be like we here in this community have the director's cut. I thought Dan would appreciate that.
Well, we all know what director's cut is. But.
You know, I have to. I actually had to write an appeal the other day. I'm still working on it on why it's taking me so long to finish school. And I'm like, okay, well, y'all want the reason? It's like, you know, which one? Being a single parent, being, you know, having an undiagnosed mental health issue, having to be the first person in my family to go to college and never having no idea what to expect, the dealing with being the imposter syndrome, dealing with everything that I have to deal with just being me and not being aware of why I have this seething rage all the time. And being told that I shouldn't, that I'm overreacting. So if they're going to get a hell of a letter when I finish, but it's just like, how dare you? How dare you ask me these things? So if you really want to know, because one of the things they said, well, it's like, you know, I have a 4.0 GPA, but because I have so many units for over, you know, four decades of going to school off and on, I have a shit ton of units, none of which are at CESA, but they want me to justify why it's taking me so long to finish college. And one of the main things is because I just realized what I wanted to be. It took me.
That sounds like some oppressive shit.
It is oppressive. And then trip this. If I, you know, because there are times that I don't do well in the class, I might have to get a withdrawal. And they're saying that if I do get a withdrawal, then that could still be detrimental. That could affect my financial aid. That is not allowed. How dare you? I am bipolar with anxiety issues. And now you're telling a person with anxiety issues that if I have a situation where I shut down and I can't benefit a class or don't do well in the class, you cut my financial aid. Yeah, I'm about to, and Robin, I'm going to need your help to write this letter because I need your
help. You got it. You got it.
And because I need this, because I need to express myself. And I, you know, so we'll talk about this because it's due next week. But I'm here. How dare you? How dare you?
Hey, Tracy, I'm going to have to leave soon. And I know the show's rolling over anyway. But before we go, I just wanted to tell you something, too, which is that you taught me something very valuable on the air. I don't know when it was exactly, but it was maybe in the past couple of months. Where we were talking, Robin and I were talking about race, and I think you were in on that conversation. And it was probably had something to do with representation in film and that kind of thing. I talk about that a lot. And I asked you a question about something, and you responded back of like, well, I can't be expected to speak for the entire black race. And you really schooled me right then and there, and I'm grateful for that. That it's that well-meaning, I'm not a racist, but yet I just did something accidentally racist, you know, kind of moment in my life where I was trying very well, but my intentions were my intentions were not catching up to my actions.
This is the thing. You know, I joke about it. You know, that's, you know, my position on the horn is, you know, the official, you know, when I first came on the show, is the official spokesperson of all Black people. And then it now is the official spokesperson of all Black queer people. So so I have a lot on my shoulders, Dan, but thank you.
For sure.
And on the way out here, but I got to share an email that I got from Matt in San Francisco. Matt is a long-standing professional in the more than occasionally harrowing world of retail. And when we brought up cash registers and checking, Tracy, Matt sent this. When I started, I was a touch key professional. That meant I inputted the UPC numbers by hand. Much like typing, you memorized the keyboard, and the faster you were, the better. Retail has always been a tough gig. I happen to be excellent and spent my life in retail. There used to be many layers of management in stores, so as you put in more effort, there was a career path. You could work step by step, increasing your responsibilities, and eventually you could bring home a six-figure salary. The hours are long. The work is intense. Leading people and servicing customers is no easy gig. Over the years, companies have eliminated many layers of management, probably on the advice of some genius from the Harvard School of Business that gives out those MBAs that stand for more bigger assholes. Most operate with one salaried store manager. No more salaried assistants. Now there are supervisors who get paid an hourly rate, and overtime is closely controlled. So it usually falls on the store manager to work longer to get everything done. Since the career paths are not there anymore because the bulk of the employees are part-time, there's no real incentive for part-time people to try to work their way up because there are only a handful of supervisor positions available, and the rate of pay does not really entice people to strive for that job. People just move through, and turnover is pretty high at most companies. So you end up with burned-out managers, stressed-out supervisors, and part-time employees that have no incentive to strive to achieve. So if you wonder whatever happened to great service, that's what happened. And that's Matt in San Francisco. And that's, you know, that's piece by piece and word by word for why it sucks to go shopping now. And it does. I mean, if I walk into one of the better stores, you know, we got two halfway decent stores in Beckley. One of them is Belk, and Belk is dying. And the other is Kohl's. And in either, and Belk is was nicer than Kohl's. But Belk went bankrupt, got bought by some hedge fund folks, and they're going to be maybe a half a notch above Walmart soon. But in either of them, it's like going unicorn hunting to get some sort of help finding what you want. And in the era of COVID, good luck trying anything on. Yeah, sure, that's going to happen. But even before COVID, you know, the internet did what it did to retail, and the retail outlets want to hang on, but the folks who got the more bigger asshole degrees from Harvard aren't actually concerned with the experience. They just want the company to exist because, you know, that's their host. And it's really sad because there was a time when going shopping was an anthropological experience. And most of the people in this room know that era. I came in on the young side of it, but it was fun. And it was nice to be treated like a human being, even if you were a coal miner or a coal miner's kid or a furnace operator's kid.
When you were a kid, too, you know, if you went along with your mom, there's always the hope that maybe you'd get something, you could get something for yourself, a type of cereal you wanted or a little toy or just something, like 25 cents for the gumball machine. Just some little
thing. Candy counter at Sears, you know, where the stuff was in bulk behind glass, you know, in glass bins behind a counter, and you'd get, you know, a 25 cents worth of this or a nickel's worth of that.
But listen, it also, yeah.
Get the peanuts and the what else did they have? Like the almonds and the salted peanuts and
That were rotating on the pan under the hot light. Yes. And were oily and wonderful. Oh my God, the cashews!
You know the cashews. Walking into Sears or Montgomery Ward's and having the candy counter, and like you could walk in and smell the candy and the popcorn because it was fresh. And the things that kids today will never have any idea. I mean, like you said, I'm even younger than you, Bob, Robin. And the fact that I remember when I would go to Learner's. And they would take, you know, when you went shopping and after you got your purchase, they put it in a box with tissue, you know, and it. I mean,
ooh, you felt like somebody.
I mean, I went and I used to work at JCPenney's back in the 80s. And one of the things was awesome. This was back when everybody had the department and you stayed in that department. So my department was household, you know, so I did the linens and the towels and stuff like that. And sometimes I worked in the gift wrapping department. But the thing is, there was always somebody in a department, you know, that knew that department that could help you. You know, you didn't, like you said.
Because it was like, a department store.
I mean,
yeah, exactly.
I can't. I used to love going shopping. I can't stand it now. Cannot stand it. I shop now. When I do go into a store, the only stores that I shop at is if I know I can return it. I can, you know, buy it. And if it doesn't fit, I try it on at home because we don't want the whole, you know, fluorescent-like thing in the fitting room. No, we're not going to go through that. But anywho, I don't have that experience anymore. And I miss it dearly, especially for how much shit costs now.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
I just got to say that guys, dudes, And all others, in less than 8 hours from now, I have to wake up to go to work. So I should go now. Before I go, I just want to thank not only the people who've joined in this conversation and with whom I've had the pleasure to just listen to what's going on with you and what has happened in your life, and I wish all the best. But I just also want to thank, you know, we're far from Labor Day. We're, you know, Labor Day is at least 6 weeks from now, I guess. But you know, God bless every worker, and I wish we were all one big union. I still believe that that would be the ideal, that we every worker, no matter what the craft, no matter what position, has some level of protection and authority and power. And the idealist in me believes that that could still be a thing someday if the world could come to its senses. But I just want to thank anybody who's worked on the checkouts, anybody that's flipped a burger or welded a seam or anything, because it's you're my brothers and my sisters, and we just have to keep fighting for what we deserve and what not, you know, not more, not less, just what we deserve, what is rightfully ours. And I love you all. That's really it. And I need to go because I got to wake up early in the morning to work.
Well, break a leg, and I mean that applies to people who aren't on screen too. Break a leg, and I still want to talk about the projects you've been working on and what you worked on that you can talk about.
Yeah.
Now. We'll do that another day.
We'll do a Hollywood movie, TV, whatever, what you've been watching, kind of show sometime in the future. But listen, I'm really grateful to share in Tracy's experiences. And other people whose names I'm forgetting because I'm 57, but it's been fun just to listen and to share and to commune.
Well, I'm almost 70.
Wouldn't know it by your voice. You sound youthful, and I don't know. Maybe I'm easily fooled, but thank you for being. You're just a young squirt. Yep. Anyway, I gotta go.
Have a good night. Give our regards to everybody. I gotta roll too because I gotta cover. I gotta fill in for Malloy here in about 36 minutes. Y'all have a wonderful evening. Thanks to Silent R. Lamar. Silent R. Lamar finished off fundraising, so we come in tomorrow. Okay, no hole to fill in. Just our regular fundraising. Wonderful. Thank you, Dan. Have a good evening.
Thank you,
Tracy. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Jeremy in Vermont.
And thank you oh so kindly, Sparky, for hosting or moderating this Monday on the Front Porch. I appreciate it so very much. Thanks to everyone who keeps this program going with your kind subscriptions over at Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to the our a la carte contributors. All of you are why the program exists. And I'm constantly searching for ways to better express both my gratitude and my profound humility that you do keep this going. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. And around the seat of at the seat of honor around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you, Dan, for joining in this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, Head On Dot Live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time with yours truly filling in. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is Head On Dot Live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine if you haven't already, please. If you've already gotten it and you know someone who hasn't, please encourage them to get their vaccine. Like President Biden said, it is one of the most patriotic things you can do right now in this country. Otherwise, maintain your lines of defenses. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Wear gloves if you feel like that would, if you're in a sketchy situation. If you're around people that you don't know are vaccinated, wear your mask as necessary and as you are comfortable. And above all, for God's sakes, if some CNN reporter comes toward you saying, "Put down that chicken leg, you're going to have a stroke," avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later.